across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound, in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Take a trip into the alternate reality of Late Night Radio.
I think I'm in something like The Matrix, and so are you.
Speech Radio, give a difference.
Is there anybody out there?
Late Night with Rufus Hound, in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
It's 3 minutes past ten. It's Tuesday. It's time to face the late night alternative. I can do a better X Factor voice than that. I don't know why I wasn't really going for X Factor, but by the end there, that was definitely an impression and not a very good one. I feel like I let myself down there a bit.
I could do the MasterChef recipe voice.
Oh, lovely. Let's have a bit of that.
Rufus is making beef with a red wine jus. Ooh. Drizzled in honey.
That's very good. There's definitely a market there that you can provide that voice. People, when they're making Sunday dinner, when they yes. want to feel a bit more pro, they just ring you and you kind of read them back the recipe they're
Sounds
following.
Like my daughter is making buns with added bogey and saliva.
That's good.
I never eat her cakes.
No. That's for the cake sale at school, isn't it?
There's a certain crunch to these. Yes, there is.
A little je ne sais quoi. The other one I can do is the fella off Big Brother, Marcus.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever his name.
Dear one.
Dear 14. And the housemates are baking a cake. Pretty cod.
Where did they find him? Was he always the plan, or was it just a bloke in the office with a good accent?
That's a very good point.
Because it was a brave choice.
Yeah.
Because there's no one like him.
No, it definitely gave that show a kind of unique perspective. But then we forget about Big Brother, don't we? That when it started, it was a sort of almost slightly po-faced.
A little bit boring.
It was a little bit boring.
But also brilliant. Nasty Nick.
Yeah.
Writing things down. The animal.
The animal.
Now look at him.
Yeah. Well, it used to be that they all had psychological evaluation. They made a very big point of saying they've all undergone psychological evaluation to be here.
They still have, but not for what you're thinking.
Exactly.
They could take books into the first one.
No, they couldn't.
I'm pretty sure they had pastimes. I think they could take books in.
I'm
sure you could sign things out with a book.
Oh, what, just pointing at letters? Mm. Like spirit spelling or whatever. Like a seance.
Yeah. Licking his tiny pencil.
Least said, soonest mended. The Ferrari as well at the time.
It was Craig's face. You've been writing names, face.
He won it though, didn't he? He had a Christmas single out.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember
At
it?
This time of year, friends and lovers should be near, share the laughter and the tears.
Oh, you actually know it.
I mean, I know it that far. I know it one line further than you, so I win!
Yeah, Craig.
Craig.
Sade.
Very good.
Do you remember Sade?
Anna, the ex-nun.
Oh, she was wonderful.
She was the best.
I loved her. What happened to her? She didn't go back to the convent.
No, I think she had a bit of TV heat for a short period.
She's too sensible.
Yeah. I think she made some sort of quite thought-out, sensible documentaries.
Yeah. What they really wanted was, you know, people climbing the walls.
And that's what they've got now. Baboons in human form.
Poor Kinga. What did you do on television, Grandma? Bottle of rosé.
It's all changed.
But the thing is, you didn't see it. These days, you would see it.
What, the actual in and out?
Maybe not a close-up, but you'd definitely see some movement. Yeah, have you seen Geordie Shore? That's filth.
No.
Yeah.
No, yeah, but I mean, look, at the point Big Brother came out, I was 20, I think, 2021. And so it was, you know, there'd never been anything like
it. Nothing, no.
Whereas now that I've lived through basically 20 years of there being plenty of things like that, I've realised, oh, I don't really like it.
No, well, the other thing is people know the game now, so what you're watching isn't the same thing. You were watching a load of housemates trying to get through in the first one. Now it's a load of people vying for attention.
Well, the biggest, the nail in that coffin was Nikki Graham.
Who is she?
Who is she? But the amazing thing about that was she was the first housemate. I watched it pretty religiously when it began. I think she was the first housemate who left the house and then, in a twist, was voted back in.
Yeah.
And what was fascinating was when she was in there, she had no idea what people had seen and how people had taken to her. And when she went back in, it was suddenly like she was playing a character.
Yeah, she was monstrous,
wasn't
she?
It felt so inauthentic and so put on. It was so much about what, you know, give people what they want.
Yeah.
And I think at that point, that was really where the fabric began to tear for me a bit. I thought, yeah, I get it now. We're in an age where the game is known.
Yeah. It's a shame, isn't it? What do they do next? Well, oh, it's all survival and stuff now, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it a shame? Does anybody care?
I used to quite enjoy it.
Sure, enjoy it. But
now
not...
I don't. Now I know that they're all building up to a fight all the time because that's what they think we want.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think I quite liked it when it was low-key with the odd moment of excitement.
Yeah.
I actually... Was it, I think, Coach Trip?
I used to love Coach Trip.
Because it was, on the whole, there would be the odd argument, but on the whole, it was just nice people being nice to each other, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I just prefer that now.
I like Coach
Trip. Maybe I've just got old, but all of this, like... I think the other thing is, having worked in television, the idea of any of these things being reality, I just feel like I'm watching somebody's way of trying to convince me that them lying to me isn't a lie. So, what am I complicit in being lied to?
Mm.
It's devalued the whole thing.
With the exception of Secret Life of the 5-year-old.
Right,
which
yeah.
is wonderful.
No
have you seen?
Filter.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, they've done a few, haven't they? 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old.
Yeah.
And then they did a sort of weird, shiny floor version of that recently on ITV.
Oh, did they?
Called something like What Would Your Kids Do or What Do Your Kids Know with Jason Manford.
Right. What was that, a kind of moral maze for kids?
It was basically The Secret Life of 5-year-olds, but the video would stop and then the parents were asked,
what did they do
we
next?
Told your kid, under no circumstances, look in this box. Then we left the room.
Oh, brilliant.
Did your kid look in the box? They're basically asking, is your kid a little shit or not?
And do you know?
And yeah, and how confident are you that your child is in fact a little shit? and some of them have absolutely, some parents got their kids absolutely banged to rights. It's
Gosh.
A joy to build. There's also an extra kind of cheeky twist, which I think this is. So I've got, you know, as we keep going on about, a 6.5-year-old and a 10-year-old.
Still? They're still hanging about.
I know. I mean, those eBay auctions are just not moving. they love that show. They love seeing what, you know, what kids do, but it operates on two levels. As a parent, it's quite nice to see kids misbehaving because it makes you think, oh, good, it's not just my kid.
Yeah.
On another level, kids love watching it because they see where they are kind of in the pecking order of, like, kind of permitted naughtiness or naughtiness that grown-ups actually find secretly quite funny. And then there's a third level where when they say, don't open that box, they could open that box and, you know, there's nothing in it. But on this show, there's a sort of prank element to it as well, where they open the box and, like, you know, 5,000 Skittles just cascade all over the floor. And I think as a parent, there is a sort of perverse joy going, yeah!
Told you not to open
that.
It.
Have that! You look at your child going, and that's why we tell you things.
Busted.
Yeah, yeah. You never know what's going
to
happen.
That reminds me of the comment, of the busted thing. We were going to school one day and there was a kid behind my youngest on his scooter and he was calling her name and calling her name. And generally with boys, she ignores him and does a face at me. What's that face? Embarrassment, she said. Embarrassment. Anyway, so he's coming up behind her, like calling her name. She's pretending she hasn't noticed. And then you hear his father further up the street calling his name over and over. And then the dad running up, grabbing hold of the scooter handle and giving her the telling off of his life.
Yikes.
And my daughter, who was like 5 at the time, said, oh, he is getting destroyed. She loved it.
Yeah. Mum, that's because you've got any popcorn on you.
Let's walk a bit slower.
Yeah, it's a weird one, that. In these days of not slapping children and, you know, or having any kind of physical telling off, your job as a parent is to work out what set of ideas you can lay out in order to encourage your child to behave in a way that they should be behaving.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, time and time again, I've caught myself. I'm like, at what point is this psychological warfare? Would it not have been fairer just to slap them, go, let that be an end to it?
Or lock them in somewhere.
We are all going to move on with our lives now. This was a thing that happened, move on. Whereas when you're like hauling them over the coals and sort of trying to reference things that you know they're going to be upset by or feel bad about so you can link a pattern of behaviour to it, feels very...
Or the freezing out. We're all going to have a good time now and you can sit there and think about what you've done.
Yeah. I'm not cross. I'm just profoundly disappointed.
Ouch. My dad can still get me with that one, and I'm 40.
But then you do disappoint him an awful lot.
Such a lot. You'd think I'd learn.
Regular listeners will understand this.
I disappointed him the other day with ruining the punchline to the Ken Dodd joke.
Oh, how did you do that?
On purpose. They've been telling that joke for ages. My dad and his sister, my auntie, and
Ken Dodd
died, did he? No, Doddy, that one.
Oh, right.
And on the day it happened, I mean, you know, too soon, but it was, you know, amongst the family, Ken Dodd died, did he? I went, yes, he actually did. They were both furious.
I think I've heard Ken Dodd's dad's dog died.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, it was really, really sad. Something like that. Anyway, welcome, listener. This is the Late Night Alternative, normally with Ian Lee. Yeah. Instead tonight with I, Rufus Hound, joined as ever by Kath.
Yeah, and we're asking tonight who you've disappointed recently.
Which, bearing in mind it's 10:15, may be incredibly recently.
Yeah.
If you're running a sexual timesheet.
Wow, you took it there.
I did.
Gosh.
Yeah. Well, if you cracked onto it after the kids were asleep, maybe that was, you know, about 10:10. That was 4 minutes ago.
Getting too much of an insight into your home
life,
mate.
And the radio's already on long enough for you to have heard this intro.
Surely we're the ultimate in, like, anti-rudeness.
An audio prophylactic, is that what you're suggesting?
Tell you something, I can't listen to people I know when I'm in the bedroom. I find it a bit weird.
What about who you're with? Shut up, you put it. I can't
weirdo.
Do this now.
I can't listen to the radio. I can't listen to work.
No. I think it's.
Or in the shower. That feels wrong, too.
It's a tricky shag if James Whale is coming at you in stereo, isn't it? Hard to maintain an erection under those conditions.
I struggle with it. I've got to be honest.
I mean, your history of erectile dysfunction is well documented.
Happens to a lot of women, apparently.
I don't think we need to investigate that too much further. You can read her blogs on the matter. But it's, as we were saying, it's the late night alternative.
Oh, dear,
where
yeah.
we're asking, who have you disappointed? Have you been told off in the street, or have you recently had an experience in the street that was rather enjoyable? As I was making my way here this evening and about to come through the front door, four young ladies were coming the other way. This is, of course, making some guess about their state, but I believe they may have had one or two refreshing beverages. And
it is Tuesday, apparently. Apparently that's fair game.
Listen, in 2018, I don't know if you've seen what's going on in the world, but I think, you know, the drunker you are, just to get through it, if you wake up 10 years from now barely being able to remember the previous decade, I think you've probably handled the entire situation with as much aplomb as we can expect out of English people. But they were singing at the absolute top of their lungs, Macy Gray's I Try.
Oh, good. Were they doing the voice?
They weren't doing the voice.
Oh. Which disappointing.
Which was a shame.
Can you hear the voice?
No.
Oh.
No, and only because I don't want to try.
Ironically.
Ironically. favourite Macy Gray song?
There was another one. The other one.
The other one. You like the other one?
Mm. What was that one?
I know the one you mean. I have no idea what it is. Mm. But she also provided the vocals on a... Fatboy Slim track.
Did she?
Called Demons.
Cheeky devil.
Oh, it's an absolute belter. We're going to have some adverts in a couple of minutes, but I'll see if Sam can line that up. Fatboy Slim and
Macy Gray.
Demons. It's very good. Very good. Yeah. Anyway, that was a joyful experience in the street because these four young ladies, I'm stood there on my own. They outnumber me, so I'm not worried about what the patriarchy has done to their imaginings of
lone man in street because they could easily duff me up. So I immediately think everyone feels rather safe and joyful. So I just joined in.
Oh, that's good.
And they were very kind about the whole thing. They got as far as the chorus, so I went, I play it off, but I'm dreaming of...
Well, I'm dreaming of you, babe!
That's exactly how they came in.
Oh,
yes!
I love it when people know their part.
It was cohesive.
It's like life is a musical. And only some people know that.
Yes! Bloody right. People say, oh, yeah, I hate going to musicals because all the action's happening and suddenly they break into song for no reason. So, well, guess what? It happens on the mean streets of South London, friends. And this ain't no musical. This ain't no country club either. All I want to do is have a little fun before I die.
This is LA.
This is LA.
Why didn't you call me?
Yes, sorry. Immediately felt rather told off there for a second. Oh,
why didn't you call me?
Oh, was that the other song?
Yes.
Macy Gray. Oh, that was a reach.
Tell me about it. Yeah. I had to Google it like mad.
Like a frenzy.
Like that a frenziest was person. Was
oh, I would also like to take one very brief moment before we have a break for this reason, and that is my 10-year-old son should absolutely be asleep by now.
And yet?
For Christmas, we bought him a smart speaker, which I refuse to have in the house because they are essentially listening devices.
And how old do you sound right now?
Yeah.
It's witchcraft, I tell you.
It's witchcraft. Well, the interesting thing about them is that they're always on. Right? That's why when you say Alexa or Hey Google or whatever the Apple
one
is.
You're triggering
or Siri,
loads. No.
Right? They have to be listening all the time because they're waiting to hear what you say.
Mm-hmm.
And were these things ever to be hacked, you're basically you've got a speaker in your house, so, you know, who knows what's going on
there?
Gosh,
I'd be bored rigid in my house.
Call me. Right.
She's watching America's Next Top Model again. Hasn't she seen it?
She's seen this one. Check the tapes. Sergey, check the tapes.
And then my kids, they literally watch the same thing over and over and over and over and et cetera.
Yeah. So I refuse to have him in the house, but I figure in a 10-year-old boy's bedroom... In a 10-year-old boy's bedroom, there is nothing that is really going to be heard there. It's largely going to be him talking to a mate in that room about either Nerf guns or a recent Moosecraft video that he's watched on, right? So I'm not so worried about it, but it means he can walk in, he can listen to music and everything else. Well, he recently found out that on that smart speaker, you can say, "Hey, Google, play talk radio." And then this starts. So he keeps the volume right down low, waits till he thinks his mum's gone to bed, or, you know, his mum is a hard-working woman, yeah. So if she's gone to bed at 10, chances are by about 5 past, sound asleep, then the little sneaky fella is listening to talk radio. So I would just very quickly like to take a moment to say, Albie, if you're listening to this, turn it off and go to sleep! I have been through this with you! This is too late to be up! If I find out you've been listening, that's it! No more pocket money! On that note, let's take some commercial messages.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
So, this was a mix done by Fatboy Slim at the peak of his powers, with vocals by Macy Gray. And I know we're not music radio, and I know that we don't really have to play music in order to keep you entertained. Obviously, Kath and I reminiscing about reality shows from 20 years ago should be enough. But on the off chance it's not, here's this.
They said she had a heart attack. I think the creature's coming back. And I am fine, cause all my love's electrifying. And I'm comfy like a cesspool. Wanna be with you. And it's my premonition. I better give my heart a listen. And my future said, all of your demons will wither away. Ecstasy. Understand when you come.
you go, some big beat. There you go, a little something, eh? Just a little je ne sais quoi for a Tuesday night. A little extra sass in your sarsaparilla. One man, of course, whose sarsaparilla remains as sassed as ever we could wish is, of course, perennial first caller, man with his finger on the pulse and his hand on the remote control, Alan Caddick! All the points on the board for you, Cads.
Princess Bride last night.
Did you watch it?
I tried to get into it, but I couldn't get my head round it.
Oh, come on, Alan. Try harder. It's a children's film.
I've seen Billy Crystal in a new light.
Yeah, right? A few prosthetics. A joke or two.
Yeah, I think he was just starting out his career then, wasn't he?
I think he'd been going a little while by then. He was known in, you know, American circles as a fine comedian and an actor.
But not truly to an international audience.
Maybe not. I don't know. When was it made?
1987.
87? I would have thought Billy Crystal had had films by then. Kath's gone to make a brew. Had she not, rest assured, I think
she would have been Googling it.
She'd be all over this like a rash.
Well, get Sam to Google it.
Billy Crystal, he'd been in the American sitcom Soap by that point. So you're right.
Saturday Night Live.
He wasn't on the regular cast of Saturday Night Live, though.
I knew Dan Aykroyd was.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't think Billy Crystal was. Anyway, when Kath gets back, we'll ask her. How's your day been, Alan?
Well, apart from quitting the fags.
You've quit the fags?
Yeah, I don't know how I managed to last a whole day without one.
Yeah, but listen, mate, you've got to knock that on the head. Sometimes when we're talking to you, it sounds like somebody's got a cement mixer going in the background and it's your lungs.
Well, at the moment, I've got dishwasher going on in the background.
You've got a dishwasher in the background?
Yeah.
All right, well, fair enough. But there's a lot of heavy breathing there. Alan, on more than one occasion, we've had a few people curious as to whether or not this was a lewd phone call.
No. I'm just a regular fat guy calling in.
In all seriousness, though, congratulations. This is, it's absolutely what you should be doing. Knock them off.
It's a hiatus.
Why would you? No, it's not a hiatus. Call it a day. Be done. You don't need that, man. You're paying massive corporations thousands of pounds a year to give you cancer. This is a terrible idea.
No one doesn't smoke properly anyway.
Oh, careful. There's a trap.
You don't smoke properly. Why? Are you sticking them up your bum and not lighting them?
I put my bag in my mouth, suck on it, then blow it straight out.
Yeah, but well, then that's even
that's
a greater
smoking,
waste.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, Billy Crystal, Kath.
Yeah, Billy Crystal.
What about him?
What movies had he done before he'd done Princess Bride?
Oh, had he done When Harry Met Sally yet?
No, that was 89.
I love that film so much.
Don't get me started on that scene, Kath. Rufus doesn't know about it.
No, and it's probably best. I mean, let Rufus sleep at night without.
No, I think he needs to be told.
He reenacted the When Harry Met Sally scene for us once, and it's a scar on my memory.
The video is on YouTube.
I wondered why you said you weren't getting a lot of sleep ever. I thought it was just two young children.
Every time it gets quiet, it's that!
The video is on YouTube.
No, sure. Because it's one thing to have the audio in your nightmares, quite something else to get the full visual.
It's one of the many disturbing things on YouTube.
Well, thanks to Jamie East, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, you loved it. Don't pretend you didn't.
I preferred the Goodfellas one best.
Oh, right, okay.
Was there a little spate where you were getting to reenact famous scenes from movies?
Jamie East realised that Alan will do anything.
Oh, right. Fine. I mean, like a sort of playground environment where you find a kid who will do a dance for a refresher.
Yes.
We even did 50 Shades of Grey as well.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
With the DIY shop.
Very good. Sounds perfect. I've nothing to add to this.
Anyway, Caddix, stop smoking. Don't give up. You have to stop.
Now, are you just jacking it in and that's you done, or are you on the old vapes as well?
I'm going cold turkey.
Good shout. Good shout.
No, very difficult shout.
No, it's difficult.
It makes me very irritable.
It is, yeah, but, Short-term pain, long-term gain.
Yeah, we're talking about me weight
right.
as well.
Well, let me ask you this question, right? Tell me three great things about smoking.
Yeah, you can make your own when you go when you're done to a note. You can dismantle them and make a wall up with it.
Right.
Well, like a hobo.
Yeah. Like a yeah, like a an old 1930s movie star where he's got a handkerchief on a long stick over his shoulder.
Yeah.
So you get to reenact a feeling of the American economic depression of the 1930s.
Isn't that just desperately fulfilling an addiction?
It's better than cocaine.
Okay, well, yeah. So there are a lot of things I wouldn't like to do.
Is it, though? Talk radio. Not afraid to ask the hard questions. Okay. Obviously, cocaine is an illegal drug, and on no level does anybody in this building or callers
Caddick.
Condone...
Caddick condones it, apparently.
No.
For a moment, say that this is a worthwhile use of any... In fact, actually, regardless of whatever else you think about cocaine, if you've ever bought a fair trade banana in your life, what the hell are you doing buying cocaine? More people's lives are torn apart by the illegal drug trade in South America. Literally whole villages, you know, laid waste to and slaughters and all sorts of things.
Get so, on to caffeine!
Whatever it is that turns you on... knock all that old nonsense on the head. Plus, did you know, I read a thing a while ago on Vice, they talked to one of the cops who tests drugs when people are arrested with drugs on them, and they have to test it, obviously, to find it is drugs. When they ask people, what is it you've got here, the people say it's cocaine. In the last 3 years, anything they have tested as being cocaine has no cocaine in it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You have no idea what it is you're sticking up your bugle.
Flipping it, Caddick.
Yeah.
So it could be self-raising flower for all we know.
You'd be lucky if that's what all it is.
Well, it's normally, apparently, like some kind of druggy drug, like MDMA or whatever, and they put in dental anti... What's it? When you've got to numb somebody.
Oh, like Novocaine.
Yeah, like that kind of thing. But what's the word I'm looking for?
Anesthetic,
thank you. It's a dental anesthetic.
So you get the numbing sensation.
You get the numbing sensation, you think, oh, this is the really good gear, but it's not. Oh, you're being sold lies.
Anyway, back to you scratching together fags from Dog End.
Right, yeah, so that was the first thing about it, is that the best thing about smoking is you can make more fags from the fags that you've already smoked.
How glamorous.
Yeah. Two, if you buy a 20-pack, if you smoke two a day, that lasts a week.
Yeah, that's, or 10 days. Maths, not necessarily the strong suit here.
But remember how many you smoke per day.
Remember, he's scratching them together, he's making new ones.
Yeah, so a pack of 20 lasts about 6 months.
Especially the way he's...
yeah.
He lights them, sucks them, puts them out.
I'll make another one of those in a minute. Delicious.
Oh, Caddick, you're just better off without it. Imagine how fresh you're going to smell.
Yeah, literally, so far, the three good things you've told us about
it... I haven't given the third one yet.
Yeah, go on then.
You haven't given two good things. You've given two slightly tragic things, but go on.
Third, the amount of people that charge for fags online, not the shops, but selling them on Facebook, is extortionate.
Dodgy fags are pricey, yes.
Not only is he getting discount fags, right, off Facebook, but he's complaining that those are too expensive, even though he can make a pack of 20 last 10 days and then recycle those to keep them going for another 10 days.
Why the hell are you giving up, Cads?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're making me want to smoke.
From the back of the envelope maths I'm doing here at my end, I think you're actually making money out of this, Cads. Cads, let me give you three reasons why you shouldn't smoke.
Yeah.
It's stupid, you're poisoning yourself, and then you'll die sooner, you will be less attractive, your skin will age more quickly, you're doing yourself absolutely no favours on any level of your life, your blood toxicity goes through the roof, your brain function, although the nicotine raises it, all the other things in it kills it off because the blood flow doesn't get to it, so you're making yourself stupider, uglier, and finding it harder to breathe. You are paying somebody else to give you less quality of life, and on top of all of those things, cancer.
That is 27 things, not three.
And is that your main objection?
No, you said three things, and you gave 27.
All right.
You got there, mate.
You're getting uglier, stupider, and
deader.
Those are my three. Let the others filter into whichever one of those three categories you see fit, Cads.
Well, I've been miscommentated, terminated.
Oh my God!
It's finally happened! Stop what you're doing! Somebody alert the press! Holy God! We finally got to the point where Caddick hung up on talk radio! They said this day would never come! They said we couldn't do it! But friends, today, find some trumpety music, Sam, for God's sake. Find a national anthem or something. Let this moment go onto the record for all time. Because today, the 27th?
Yep.
The 27th of February! Came around, in like a lamb, out like a lion. Today was the day we broke him. Because it isn't enough in life to have a dream, unless you can make that dream come true. Day after day, Alan Caddick has phoned this radio station, desperate to be on from 10 p.m. all the way through till 1. The slings and arrows of outrageous fortune thrown at that young man have never quashed his instinct, have never quelled his desire. But it transpires that all we needed all along, the one thing he couldn't handle, was the truth. Let that be a lesson to you all. When a mountain seems unclimbable, when a river seems too wide to swim, don't look out at what isn't. Look inside for what yet could be.
Late Night with Rufus Hound, in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Late Night Alternative. The man just told you everything you need to know, but he didn't say that Kath was here.
No, why?
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 Patriarchy! Sons of... The sooner men all die, the happier I think we're all going to be.
My inner monologue sounds a lot like you these days.
Yeah, I'll take that as the compliment that I'm sure you intended it as. Who've we got? Who's been on... Sam, just put through whoever's been on longest, because I've not really been keeping track.
Or who is the least tedious?
Well, you can decide which of those categories was the qualifier as we speak to Gavin in Bishop Stortford.
Oh, that's fine.
Ah,
I'll allow that.
That's a beautiful call.
You've had the official seal of approval there.
I know, I just feel like a gentle drizzle on your conversation.
Yes, you are the balsamic on our kale.
Yeah, I was trying to work out how to follow your man. You know,
quit smoking and refuse to agree it was a good thing, and let's see if we can't duff you up.
Yeah, that was quite dramatic.
It wasn't.
It got that way, didn't it? It escalated rather.
Oh, it was a real flat.
I didn't even think it was a smoker. So.
Yeah, well, okay. You know, he's not anymore.
He's got his vices.
Yeah, let's hope.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Best thing you can do for yourself.
First thing that I've got to chuck into the mix.
Lovely.
But I think this is gonna stink. So this is just like a practice one.
All right.
Enough disclaimer.
Yeah.
Not feeling nerve or anything.
Stop showing us the pictures on the menu and bring us the meal.
No, I'm going to bring you some fries and some dips.
Hello.
Mata Hari.
Yeah.
And P.G. Woodhouse. Why are they treated so differently?
Wow. I don't know if I have...
That would work, man, but I've got something else to cover it in case that don't work.
P.G. Woodhouse and Mata Hari. Why were they treated so differently? I'll be honest... I don't know if I understand the context of that sentence.
Or whether they're comparable.
Mata Hari was a spy, wasn't she? She
sexy
was like a
spy, yeah, belly dancer.
A honey trap spy belly dancer.
Like Lord Haw-Haw was.
P.G. Woodhouse was like Lord Haw-Haw, was he?
Well, he was considered at the time, yeah, because he was interned in France, and then the Germans took him, and he was made to make broadcasts about how lovely and mellow the German internment camps were, and everybody thought he was a spy, but he was just an old duffer that didn't know any better. But, yeah, I was thinking... You know.
P.G. Woodhouse?
Of Jeeves and Wooster
the
fame.
The man who wrote Jeeves and Wooster was a British prisoner of war.
Yes, mate, yeah. His book on it is called Performing Flea.
Good God.
No, I'm a massive Woodhousian. I really like his stuff.
Yeah, well, look...
That didn't go down too well.
No, listen.
No, it didn't.
Gavin, what's basically happened is you've made an incredibly intelligent point, and neither Kath nor I were either A, up to answering or responding to it, or B, able to understand the context of it. So you're going to have to. So, Mata Hari.
Yes, who was a spy.
Right. For who?
And she was considered by the
who was she a spy for?
Well, she spied on the... on the Allied troops, she was supposed to be some sort of... That's where they got the idea for the James Bond films of the exotic woman, like, seducing all the male spies.
Right.
Oh, I thought it was just an excuse for him to get his end away repeatedly.
Well, if you're a spy, yeah, why not?
Why not indeed?
I don't know how they're getting other work done, frankly.
Yeah. Well, it depends where the microchip's hidden.
Oh, gosh.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's very bleak.
Yeah, have you seen Kingsman 2?
The temptress of,
never mind,
of the Allied forces. And P.G. Woodhouse was accused of being a disseminator. Is that disseminator? Yeah, I think that's the right word. Disseminator of Nazi propaganda back to England. Mm. When he was in the German and French internment camps in the Second World War.
Wow. Mata Hari, sorry, because the bit I'm missing here is, who was Mata Hari a spy for?
I'll be honest, man, I don't know. I think it was probably the Russians at the time.
Let's look her up,
yeah,
shall we?
We're Googling. Googling. Remember, friends, when Hound's in the big man's chair, talk radio essentially becomes university for the cheap.
All right, here we go. Margarita Gertruda Marguerite MacLeod, Nazella, 7th of August, 1876, if you're interested, was better known by the stage name Mata Hari, Dutch exotic dancer and courtesan.
Hello.
Who was convicted of being a spy for Germany during World War One and executed by firing squad in France.
Bless her.
Well.
Bless her, eh?
Very naughty lady.
So she was, hang on, but who was, so who was she a spy for?
For the Germans.
Germans.
She was a German spy, so who did she try and ensnare?
Oh, let's have a look. Hang on. Double agent. During World War One, the Netherlands remained neutral. As a Dutch subject, Zella was able to cross national borders freely. To avoid the battlefield, she travelled between France and the Netherlands via Spain and Britain.
Putting it about and being mellow.
Well, you say putting it about. Involved in what was described as a very intense romantic sexual relationship with a Russian pilot serving with the French.
You're a legend, man. You can translate the most filth into...
Captain,
that sounds productive and
Captain
wise.
Vadim Maslov was the one who got the benefit of her attention. She called him the love of her life.
Yeah, so, I bet she did.
So, she was...
She was allowed to see Maslov if she agreed to spy on Germany.
Yeah, now if you compare Woodhouse to Lord Haw-Haw, you'll see how it all ties in.
All right, well, next bit of Googling, Kath, come on.
Was Woodhouse a good belly dancer? She was a very good belly dancer.
Oh, yeah, it's a lovely turn on him. Yeah,
So where are we up to? Before the war, Zella had performed as Mata Hari several times before the Crown Prince Wilhelm, eldest son of Kaiser Wilhelm II, of pointy hat fame, and nominally a senior German general on the Western Front. The Deuxième Bureau believed she might be able to obtain information by seducing the Crown Prince for military secrets. In fact, his involvement was minimal, and it was German government propaganda that promoted the image that the Crown Prince is a great warrior. Still... Bonus for him. The worthy successor to...
Sorry, did you say bonus? Or...
so he was a playboy noted for womanising, partying and indulging in alcohol, who spent another portion of his time intriguing with far right-wing politicians with the intent to have his father declared insane and deposed.
He was basically the German Alan Caddick.
Yeah, so unaware that the Crown Prince did not have much to do with the running of, well, anything, the Deuxième Bureau offered Zella 1 million francs if she could seduce him and provide France with good intelligence about German plans. The fact that the Crown Prince had, before 1914, never commanded a unit larger than a regiment and was now supposedly commanding both an army and an army group at the same time should have been a clue. So Zella's contact with the Deuxième Bureau was Captain Georges Ladoux, who was able to emerge later as one of her principal accusers.
Oh,
hang on a minute.
Classic.
Yeah, you see, there's intrigue and...
They used her.
Yeah,
of course they did.
They used her. So let's go to the trial and execution after the stitch-up. In December 1916, the French Second Bureau of the French War Ministry let Matahari obtain the names of 6 Belgian agents. 5 were suspected of submitting fake material and working for the Germans, while the 6th was suspected of being a double agent for Germany and France.
Yeah.
2 weeks after Matahari had left Paris for a trip to Madrid, the double agent was executed by the Germans, while the 5 others continued their operations. The development served as proof to the Second Bureau that the names of the 6 spies had been communicated by Matahari to the Germans. Oh, yeah.
Imagine that.
So those Germans.
Oh, the old Germans, though.
On the 13th of February 1917...
the old Germans.
She was arrested in her room at the... This is the sad part.
Yeah, we're in the sad part now.
Okay.
No, tell, please. Yeah, Dick.
She was arrested in a room at the Hotel Elysee Paris and the Champs-Élysées Paris, put on trial on the 24th of July, accused of spying for Germany and consequently causing the deaths of at least 50,000 soldiers. Nice. Although the French and British intelligence suspected her of spying for Germany, neither could produce definite evidence against her. Supposedly, secret ink was found in her room, which was incriminating evidence at that period. She contended it was just makeup. A harlot, yes, but a traitor, never, a phrase attributed to Matahari during her trial. It sounds like she kind of got caught in the middle of stuff.
Yeah, doesn't it? And at that time...
And they found a disposable woman.
Yeah, basically we can foist all of the darkness onto one scapegoat.
Yeah. She's already a quote-unquote courtesan.
Yeah.
What difference does it make?
Exactly. Right, so come on, PG... Can you Google PG Woodhouse?
PG Woodhouse.
Specifically the...
Purveyor of sexy dancing before...
If you want to do it, probably be P.G. Woodhouse, French internment.
All right.
Go on, you tell us, because you know.
Yeah, P.G. Woodhouse, French internment.
But we're saying, rather than us just read it off Wikipedia...
Oh, right. Tell us out of your mind.
He got knocked up in a French internment camp.
So hang on a second, right? Because the thing I know about P.G. Woodhouse is he was a schoolmaster at Dulwich College.
Yeah.
But so this would have been when he was a younger man.
No, this was when he was in his dotage. He was taken from his home, and because he was living in France at the time.
Right.
Yeah, he was taken from his home, and he was taken by the German mob.
Right, so in occupied France.
Internment.
Right, I see what they're doing.
Yeah, they treated him all really well, and he was quite happy, and he had time to sort of write some stuff and be mellow, and they gave him some decent food and everything. He was really happy. He got on well with the chaps in the exercise yard, and the Germans said, well, we're treating you so well, why don't you send some missives back to old Blighty about how well we're treating you? So old Plum, he goes, yeah, all right, I'll just do it. And he sent all these missives back saying how well he was treated by the Germans. And having received them, England said that he was a traitor for saying that the Germans were like really nice cats, when in effect he was just saying, they're treating me all right, man.
Yeah.
And he never returned to England again after that because he would be in a load of trouble if he...
Yeah, he was viewed as, you know, treacherous thought.
Mm. Yeah. Pretty much, Nazi sympathizer.
The difference then, I think, would be that, like we said, she was kind of deemed a disposable woman who was used, rather.
And was a spy.
And was spying, yes.
Yeah. But, have you checked out the details with Lord Haw-Haw yet?
Well, no, Lord Haw-Haw was generally not very...
Well, you know, he's kind of...
But Woodhouse, it sounds like he was just hapless.
I don't know anything about Lord Haw-Haw.
Nice what's Lord Haw-Haw about? Me all right.
He was like Tokyo Rose, but the male version of, you know, say,
Germany's
going to win and you should give it up now and...
All right.
You know, when people used to listen to the radio and believe everything.
Right.
I've got one more thing because I'm kind of running out of batteries.
Okay.
Do you want to go for it?
No, it's all right. We got about a minute and a half till we've got to take the adverts, so that's your time.
Can I do it in a minute and a half? I'll just let you go on with it.
An anticlimax.
Jeez.
In the future.
What?
Way to tickle the underside without doing anything to the end.
No, I can't do it in a minute and a half, Rufus. Honestly, I can't, man.
All right, well...
Well, you're the one that said that time was of the essence because of your battery.
Well,
maybe we've used 30 seconds discussing it.
Yeah, listen, let's just write it off as a bad lot. Although, right, I would like to say, Gavin, it was an unexpected turn. Normally, I spend some time saying it's the late-night alternative, you set the agenda, we talk about whatever you want to talk about. Didn't imagine that was going to include First World War spies.
Quickly, we see the future because our eyes can't process the information to our brains. We're living 1.24 seconds in the past. There we go.
Well, yeah, but philosophically, there's no such thing as the present.
No, I'm just talking physics, man. Our eyes can't get the information to our brains quick enough, so we're living behind. We predict what we see in the future by learned experiences.
Yeah, but my point is there's no such thing as the present.
Yeah, there is. It's because it's what comes through your eyes, man.
No, that's to do with perception of the present. There's no such thing as the present.
Yeah, it is, but we're just behind it.
It's an interesting philosophical discussion. I would imagine if you were listening to talk radio, because maybe you were having difficulty getting to sleep, this is the sort of thinking that's going to keep you up all night long. We have done you a very, very, very genuine disservice. Back after this.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Take a trip into the alternate reality of Late Night Radio.
I think I'm in something like The Matrix, and so are you.
Speech Radio. Get the difference.
Is there anybody out there?
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
He's absolutely right. I mean, I say it every time. I mean, this guy's just nailing it. Congratulate whoever that man is. Give him an extra biscuit. We've had a few tweets coming in. You can tweet us at Talk Radio, or this tweet actually comes in on my Twitter, which is at Rufus Hound. Matahari Stormy Daniels. Exotic ladies always getting caught up in intrigue. A fine parallel. Maybe the time has come for some kind of biopic of Matahari. In light of the recent revelations that Stormy Daniels has made about POTUS, or IMPOTUS, as I believe the truth probably of it is, give or take a blue pill. Kerry Wales has tweeted saying, I'm not listening to you right now, but I will listen to you in the future as I did in the past. So why am I not listening to you now? Is it because we constantly shift in time? Kerry Wales immediately seizing the philosophical quandary that we were placed in by Gavin, and applying it to the talk radio listening experience. It's the quality that we have of our listeners here at Talk Radio. Is it also the quality we have of our callers? Let's find out as we talk to Andy. Andy, how are you?
Hello.
You all right, fella?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. You know what, I called up to talk about Billy Crystal and smoking, but, I mean, since you're on this philosophical quandary, I mean, I'd just like to point out that actually the past, the present and the future are all human constructs anyway. So,
yes. Quite
frankly, you know, it's a man-made product. Is it really that relevant? You know, we're all quite insignificant, actually, in terms of if you take the whole universe as a benchmark. But no, my main point was about Billy Crystal. I don't know why you were talking about Billy Crystal, but...
Well, because last night... I just to explain, Andy... Last night we were talking about The Princess Bride and how great a film it was. And
it is an amazing film,
it's the best, isn't it?
It is. It is incredible.
So we talked about that, and it transpired that Alan Caddick had never seen A Princess Bride. So we said we would refuse to talk to him until he'd watched it. And, he was saying, it was the film that brought Billy Crystal to international attention. And I thought, that can't possibly be true.
No, surely he was already known.
But then we were struggling to think of movies he'd done
before. Have you ever heard of, like, The 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon? So in the interest of The 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon and knowing that Tony Hendra has been a friend of the show in the past.
Yeah.
Well, you'll be aware of This Is Spinal Tap.
I am, yeah.
And there's a mime artist in This Is Spinal Tap, and that mime artist is played by none other than Billy Crystal.
Hello.
Yeah, what's the line he does?
I don't know. Well, his line, yeah. I think he just waves his hands about. But,
oh, no, he says something.
Does he?
Yeah.
He probably does. It's probably quite clever and quite witty and quite funny.
Tony Hendra said everyone was improvising.
Right.
But they kind of realised that Billy had worked that line into it.
Right.
Tony Hendra, it didn't quite work.
Right. But, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that Spinal Tap, that was probably about 84... Princess Bride is something like 87, so, I mean, you know, it's way before Princess Bride.
Right, yeah, okay, well, that's...
Plus, Billy Crystal wouldn't have been made up in all that makeup in Princess Bride if he wasn't already well-known, surely.
Yeah, well, is it Magic Max is the character he plays?
Miracle Max.
Yeah. Miracle Max, that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it did have to be an older character, so, I mean, maybe not. I'm trying to think of... Yeah. Can we think of anybody...
Well, he's supposed to be ancient, isn't he, Miracle Max?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He is. He's supposed to be. He's supposed to be sort of mystic as well. You know, quite incredible, really. But it's just that it just struck me that obviously, you know, Billy Crystal was well known before the old Princess Bride. But Princess Bride is a fantastic film, though.
Yeah.
You know, Andre the Giant, absolute legend.
Legend. In fact, there was a thing going out today. They've Sky Arts, I think it is, make a series called Urban Myths.
Oh yeah,
where they take they basically take weird moments in pop culture folklore and then turn them into dramas. So I think most of the stories start with all of this story is mostly true. And the new batch is about backstage at Live Aid, because Noel Edmonds was the helicopter pilot flying people in and out at Live Aid. And Alice Cooper hung out for a weekend with Salvador Dali. Was it Run DMC's tour bus broke down?
But again, you know, it comes back to the philosophical quandary of what is the present, what is the past, and what is the future? If it's not just nothing but a human construct. It's like millions and millions of people celebrate New Year's Eve, don't they? But quite frankly, we wouldn't have New Year's Eve if we hadn't have invented the calendar system, if we hadn't have invented time, and time is a human construct. So
yeah, it is a human construct, but
it's
also
really.
Yeah, but I mean, I've had this conversation with physicists before where they're like, well, yeah, it's a weird one in that time is both a requirement for so much of measurement, and measurement is largely how we then work out how we can, you know, get ourselves into space or move a satellite around the Earth, you know, because things are... But really all time does is describe a movement of matter and energy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's weird that, like, when train timetables first started, they were all local time. So, like, the train time in Greenwich... was about an hour behind the train time in Scarborough or something like that.
Wow.
So, I mean, how on earth did anyone ever get anywhere or know when the train was arriving somewhere?
But
when
people, I've got this... people didn't have watches, did they? Like, in the north, in industrial areas, you'd have one person who had a clock in the town.
Yeah.
And they would be responsible for getting everyone out of bed.
They were called knocker-uppers.
The knocker-upper with a big stick.
Yeah.
Or they would throw gravel at the windows.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so it's a relatively new feature, isn't it, that we all, you know, we all agree that midday is the same time, you know.
I suppose it's since the country and the world got smaller. You know, we need to interact with different places more than we did back in the day when, you know, to go to the next town would take you the best
part. Well, it's probably, that's why they made Greenwich the meridian, isn't it? I mean... Didn't have to be Greenwich, it could have been anywhere.
But I think that was born out of empire, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, it's the way of navigating the globe, isn't
it?
That's where the naval thing is.
You'll get all the flat earthists phoning up now and saying, no, that's not true, there's no such thing as latitude and longitude, but, you know.
Flat earthers from all over the globe.
Well, yeah, I don't know. When I was a kid and I was growing up, I used to go out sailing and I used to navigate by using that system, and quite frankly, if that is a man-made system, it kind of works. And you know, I don't know how I would have managed to find my way from A to B otherwise, because quite frankly, when you're in the middle of the ocean, there's nothing but sea and sky. So you know, it's just difficult to be able to navigate your way from one place to another without having some kind of point of reference. So at some point you've got to invent a human construct that actually says that is that.
Speaking of sailing, if you're into that, have you seen the documentary Deep Water about Donald Crowhurst?
No.
It's amazing.
I heard of it. It sounds incredibly interesting,
oh
yeah.
Oh, my God, what a tragic story. Do you know this story?
No.
Donald Crowhurst was a guy, like a sort of amateur sailor. He gets involved in a round-the-world solo navigation race. Him, really flash bloke from France, posh bloke with, you know, and he's got this kind of boat that he's been working on and, you know, he's got his mate's money put into it and stuff.
Right.
Ends up going doing this circumnavigation, and halfway round, one of the people bails out. He finds himself, I think if I'm telling this right, but he finds himself momentarily in the lead.
Right.
But then he finds himself completely off course. He starts making up where he is.
Okay.
People think he's going to win this race.
Yeah.
This is a true story.
Yeah. I haven't seen this documentary, but that is the movie that Colin Farrell,
Colin Firth,
and Rachel Weisz.
That's
are
exactly
now in.
It.
It's that story, right?
That's exactly it. It's an amazing story.
Right? Yeah.
So
I'll have to check that out.
He finds himself completely lost, and he's starting to go a bit cabin feverish, and you know, everything is at stake. Everything is at stake. He's put loads of money into this, and
yeah,
he realizes he's going to be ruined. So he might as well go balls out, basically. And he starts making up his position, going through the logbooks and working it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, in actual fact, he's, you know, he's way off course, and he lands at one point, and, you know, he's sitting in Argentina, and you're thinking, please just dob yourself in, you can save yourself. And he doesn't, he goes back out there, and he just finds himself, you know, he's completely out of his depth. So it's
been, yeah, you will be.
And you know, he did these recordings for his kit. It was just, it's heartbreaking. It's a mad way.
No, it's incredibly easy to do because there's nothing. Like,
but it's his character as well. He's just, oh, the self-destruction is awful, you know, and you're thinking, at so many points he could say, I'm not where you think I am, and it could come clean, but then it gets to a point where he can't anymore.
Right.
No, he's just there going, I'm so convinced by my own by my own workings out that I'm right. I'm either right or...
No, he knows he's not right.
There's nowhere else you can go, is there, if you're in the middle of the ocean?
No, and he's doing these sort of satellite phones to his... Well, it wouldn't have been satellite phone calls, but he was doing these phone calls to his wife, radio phone calls to his wife.
Yeah.
And, you know, telling her that everything's going to be all right. It's just, oh, it's awful.
I know, it's terrible. I mean, I had the same thing, got caught in fog once, trying to get to Alderney, which is a Channel Island in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And all the sat-nav equipment and all the navigation was telling me we were at some point, and then at some point we realised we're obviously not there. And I think when you make that realisation, you've got to try and reach out to somebody else.
Yeah.
Because if you don't get some kind of point off somebody, and what we did was, like, in the middle of the, you know, in the middle of the English Channel, no idea where you are, you've got a radio station. I mean, we radioed Radio Portland, we radioed Plymouth, and we radioed Cherbourg, and the one at Alderney, and we asked them to give us their position, because they can give you a position from your radio signal.
Right.
And then all you do is you on the chart, you draw exactly the line that they're telling you. So they're telling you, you know, Alderney's telling you you're here. So you draw a line in that direction, and then you go, Portland's telling you you're here, Plymouth's telling you you're here, and Cherbourg's telling you you're here. And basically, where all those lines cross, that's where you are. That is your actual location.
Oh,
so you can work it out. But if you're so convinced that you're right, and you don't take anybody else's help, you can really come a cropper, especially in the middle of the ocean.
Or I think in this case, he thought he could get back.
He thought he'd get away with it. That's the thing.
He thought he could get back. Then he thought he could get away with it. And then he thought, I can't tell them the truth anymore.
Yeah.
No, exactly. That's fascinating. Oh, I want to see that. What's that?
Oh, it's so good. It's called Deep Water. There are sort of dramatisations of it, but this one's called Deep Water. You can get it on DVD.
But it's the actual, like, documentary.
Yeah, because there's loads of, like, film footage. Because he was, like, you know, plucky, young, have-a-go, you know, dad. And
circumnavigate the globe and all that. Yeah.
Oh, I think you'll enjoy it, but it's... I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it's a story and a half, that.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah, I used to work at a cinema when Titanic came out, and I used to enjoy it, spoiling it for the audience when they were coming in. I'd be standing there on the drop box telling them, like, you know what, the boat sinks at the end of it.
Yeah, I think they might have had a clue, but fair enough, that was a mean thing to do.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, the boat sinks.
Yeah.
extensive yeah, Hollywood rewrites. Yeah, actually, we'll get off at the other end. Everything's fine. They just didn't think the audience would really go for a sad ending.
You like films where everyone dies?
Yeah, that's another topic. You know, so many films they end with happy endings. I like films where everyone dies. You know, like Easy Rider. Easy Rider is brilliant. They all die at the end.
Spoiler alert. That's a 30-year-old spoiler alert.
Yeah, exactly. Spoiler alert. Sorry. Spoiler alert. If you've not seen Easy Rider, I mean, you know, it's not like you've only had what 40-odd years to watch it, but yeah, basically everyone dies, so when you're watching that film, you think it's all great, and everyone's hippy-dippy, ideologically tripping out on acid and all that. Well, I mean, you know, it's not that great, is it?
I quite like it when it flips.
I like that.
Boogie Nights, where it all starts going Pete Tong halfway through.
Yeah, you go, sorry, forget this. That's what I think, you know, like True Romance was supposed to end like that, and then he didn't want to do it.
Tarantino wimped out, did he?
Yeah, they wimped out. I think the original screenplay that Tarantino wrote is like they actually, Clarence sadly ends up dying. Oh. I don't wanna...
I love a Paddy Considine film because he can really do leak.
Exactly, he's amazing. I was watching him today actually, talking about his new film. I've got to see that. I haven't seen that yet, but the one about the boxer.
Journeyman.
Oh, so it looks amazing. But yeah, he was talking about it today on Film 4, just a little thing about, you know, I mean, it's a challenge, isn't it? Directing it and acting in it.
No, I can't imagine.
I think the man's a genius. I actually really love Paddy Considine. His best role, though, has got to be in Dead Man's Shoes. Yeah, and it's got to be the bit where he just says, like, he says to the guy, and the best thing is all the guys walking and running around in their little 2CV, you know?
Yeah.
All the scumbags, they're running around, they're driving around a little 2CV.
Yeah.
Just cracks me up. It's brilliant. And then they come out, and then Paddy Considine just goes, yeah, it was me, I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah. That's one of those films, it's so low budget that you think it can't possibly be any good. And then,
it ticks along, right? And you're thinking, all right, I got this. Oh, yeah. A little bit quirky. Whoa, hang on a minute. Yeah. It all goes. That and A Room for Romeo Brass, that's another brilliant one.
Bob Mortimer's favourite film of all time.
It's amazing.
Oh, he is brilliant. I love Paddy Considine.
That's Shane Black,
is it? Just join the love of Paddy Considine.
Yeah. And anybody I know who's worked with him or had anything to do with him says he's an absolutely smashing fella as well.
No, I bet he is. So, never met the guy, but yeah.
Yeah, anybody... Love his work. If you ever wanted to look up to anybody, evidently Paddy Considine, a pretty fine candidate.
And it was Shane Meadows. That's the one.
Shane
he needs
Black.
A letter right
Shane
now.
Meadows,
to his mum,
yeah,
doesn't
he's
he? Flipping it.
Shoes, yeah.
Yeah, he's dark. That's dark stuff.
Yeah.
Did you watch This
and
Is England?
All that, in that time, he was on like war films as well, quite unknown, you know? And then I think This Is England kind of elevated him up.
God, that's a film and all, isn't it?
Which is good.
Did you watch any of the series?
Yes. And there were so many moments in that where I went, oh God, I can't anymore. But you can't switch it off.
Yeah.
I worked with Chanel Cresswell, who won, I think it was a BAFTA for her part in This Is England 90.
Wow.
She's a fool.
It was brilliant.
I love her to pieces. If you ever get the chance to go for a drink with Chanel Cresswell, treat yourself.
I'll bear that in mind. I'll look her up.
She's a phenomenal woman from Derby. And no airs, no graces, no nothing. But my gosh, what an actor.
Gosh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Some very, very strong performances.
Yeah. Well, look, thanks for Indie. Well, we started with Billy Crystal. We ended with Paddy Considine.
There you go. And full circle.
You can't say full circle. Yeah. The natural bedfellows of Crystal and Considine.
Yeah, who'd have thought it?
Yeah. Well,
Andy. Met Sally.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your call, Andy.
No worries. All right, take it easy, yeah?
You too, fella.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Tuesday, it's Tuesday night. Tuesday, it's a Tuesday night here on your talk radio. You could ring up on 0344 499 1000 if you did. We could have a chat. What about you get to decide that? Pick up your phone, don't be alone. Come and have fun with.
It's only going to rhyme with bum, so how are you going to get there?
Yeah, or bone.
I was trying to avoid that. But worth just calling it a day, really. Worth just absolutely knocking that on the head.
I'm amazed you got as far as you did.
Thanks very much.
Commitment, that is. That's professionalism.
If I'd had more than 4 hours sleep last night and not worked a 12-hour day, I think I made it all the way to the end of the song.
I find I make some of my best compositions when I'm virtually delirious.
What was that book I've ordered it on Amazon, the woodpecker and the thing that we found out about last night.
About a packet of fags and a woodpecker.
Yeah, a woodpecker falls in love with a cigarette. That's, I feel
like... a smoking magpie, but never a woodpecker.
I feel like I'm about 20 minutes away from rewriting that book. it is the late night alternative. We need you to join in. 0344 499 1000. One young man has grasped the mantle. The gauntlet has been laid down. He's picked it up eagerly, keenly, and with the will to succeed is Andre.
Hello?
All right, Andre?
Who's that?
It's your dad.
How you doing?
Put that away.
Oh,
I'm
God,
all right.
Yeah, all right, Cass?
Yeah.
How's the bike?
Still stationary. No.
Did you find the battery, by the way?
No, because my manual says you have to open the seat and underneath there should be an obvious compartment. No, there ain't.
Yeah. No.
No, there ain't. No. There are two really rusty screws that have clearly never been moved, but I thought I'll unscrew them anyway and see if I can lift the seat, sort of book it out.
Yeah.
And what was under it?
Can't get it out. It's never been out. So I think I've got the wrong manual that they've given me.
Oh.
Yeah. And
did you get the screws undone?
Yeah.
Oh.
But didn't do anything. All the screws are unscrewable. It's fine, but I'm going to end up with a bike in bits at this rate.
Yeah.
Look at a side compartment, Kath was saying. Is there a side pannier or panel?
There are. The back of it is all one. But there are sort of viewing holes that you can undo. But and I've done that, and I can see the spark plugs, but I can't see the battery. But I can see the battery if I lie on the floor and look up underneath next to the exhaust.
Yeah. It's exhausting, but someone's got to do it.
I wish someone else would do it. I wish I'd surrounded myself with more mechanically minded people instead of, artists and the like.
I'll give it a whirl, if you want me to. If you get stuck.
Oh,
really stuck,
thanks, but I don't want you to know where I live.
Oh, all right then. We'll bring you around here then. Oh no, it don't go.
Don't move.
Right, well, a quick tune for you. I'm just in the middle of saying I'm in Laffy, but I can't sing to that because it's not ready yet.
Mm.
But I like the Clash and Joe Strum and all that, Kath, didn't you?
Yeah, I know you love it.
Might not know.
He does
now. I've had vicious rumours. A long time ago there were pirates with radio stations from the sea. Now all the stations are silent because they ain't got a government licence. Right, that's just a quick one. But can I set me lappy up?
Yeah, why not? Let's do live tech support.
Well, what names don't you like? What music do you like, Rufus?
A lot of instrumentals.
Oh, no, I can't sing them, unfortunately.
Yeah,
it's
funny that.
Right, hold on, I'll fire. I'll get something good for you.
All right, that sounds like almost like a threat.
I'll give you
something good for you. It's lagging a bit.
What about a bit of Chaz and Dave, Andre?
No, what, we've got the old beer on the sideboard here? No. I don't like that.
I don't care. If you come round here, I've got my beer on the sideboard here. Let Mama sort it out if he comes round here.
It's almost like the real thing. I'm going to go and see Chaz and Dave.
Oh, what a treat.
At the Albert Hall.
Oh!
Yeah! Chew on that.
Very cool. They're from Edmonton. And
are
I saw.
They?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they still going?
Oh!
Yes!
Yeah.
Yeah?
They've, as life has worn on, they've had some unfortunate and unhappy things happen to them with their personal health and with the health of, their nearest and dearest. So
but they're still playing, though, as a band.
I think it was Chaz.
Chaz has just got over cancer.
He's just got over cancer.
Dave lost his wife and didn't want to perform for a while.
Yeah.
But those two are poets. They're amazing.
Yeah, they're phenomenal.
They're poets and they know it.
Yes.
Yeah?
If you like, yeah.
I mean, No Pleasing You. There isn't... Find me a better song than No Pleasing You.
I'm just looking one here, actually. I think I might have a bit of Morrissey for you, actually.
Ah, a bit miserable.
Yeah, shouldn't be too bad. Let's have a look.
No pleasing you.
Yeah, it's a bit of Morrissey, yeah. Oh, I've got a lovely one for you.
Hello.
All right.
Or is it something a bit more cheerful? Radiohead?
Much better.
A bit Coldplay.
None of that. I mean, it's all yellow stuff.
One of my favourite jokes from a very funny comedian called Duncan Oakley. Oh, no, Christian Riley. Christian Riley, yeah. Who did... I came along... Played Pokemon with you. Our favourite's Pikachu.
I'm a Sega.
He's all yellow.
I'm a Sega Mega Drive man myself.
Ah, well, you can't have everything in life.
No.
Yeah, Sam. Sam's. You've just become Sam's favourite caller. Last night we discussed the turf war between Nintendo and Sega. Sam showed his hand on that one, but, you know, we're still working with him until we can find a replacement.
A good one. Yeah, I'm sorry to talk it over you, but I'm just trying to get this nerve. Right, have a listen to this, what you reckon? Bit of volume on the lappy.
Yeah. Do you want me to give you a bit of X Factor voiceover?
No need for that.
All right, fair enough.
Don't steal his shine, Rufus.
Yeah.
I'm Morrissey, I am at the moment. Right, hold on.
That's very tinny, that backing track.
It's hardly audible.
Sleep on, dream of love.
Oh,
I might turn the radio down for this. Because it's the closest you will get to love.
Oh, my.
If you're listening to this, you're listening to Talk Radio, you might think, why is this still on the air? Surely they could have drawn this to a close by now. Honestly, no one else has phoned in. If you want this to end, it's going to have to be you that ends it. 0344-499-1000.
Jesus made
until we've got other options, why wouldn't we just let this roll on?
Meanwhile, all over the country, there are people looking at a half-full glass of beer and going, no, I don't need this anymore. That's not a...
What, because the euphoria induced in them by hearing...
This is the result of too much beer down the shed, isn't it?
All right, I could be here. I could right be Morrissey, I reckon, on stage.
Okay.
Get a gladioli. Shirt unbuttoned to the waist. Some questionable views about Brexit.
I'll carry on.
Yeah, go for it.
Could you even bear?
I really like Morrissey and the Smiths.
Do you?
Yeah.
You used to.
God.
Or anywhere.
Just to underline for the at home listener. No one else has phoned in. So this is continuing.
You may think this is the sound of a man who's got his manhood so trapped in his fly.
So
it's a man quite happily singing to himself.
Yeah. Well, not to himself, Kev, to the nation. This is to the 4/6 million listeners that we have on this show. They're all wrapped with this.
Do you think he lives in a semi? Imagine the neighbours. Oh, he's doing it again, Derek. Trapped under something. No, he's singing.
I've never heard this song.
I wouldn't know.
0344-499-1000.
Even he thinks it's enough.
Encore!
Thank you.
Oh, Elvis has left the building. Can't have everything, can you? Be careful what you wish for. Because it might be that. If it's a monkey paw situation where you think you're saying, oh, we'll have a few kind of more jivvied up callers. And instead, that's what happens.
That was too much jivvy.
We've over-jived.
Not for the first time, Rufus.
Yes, well, you know, this is what I was warned about at school. If you carry on like this, young man, you'll over-jiv. And it's bad enough to over-jiv in private, let alone on the national airwaves.
Trouble is, you can't put the jiv back.
Well, once you jiv, you can't stiv. As we, I think we all know it goes. Yeah. Well, look, what have we learnt so far? There's no such thing as the present or the past or the future. Everything is merely matter and energy moving around.
Yeah.
Billy Crystal was in Spinal Tap. We could just go on IMDb, let's be honest, couldn't we? And find out more about Billy Crystal's movies. But why would we when we can...
We all know he peaked at Monsters, Inc.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Was it Mike...
Mike Wazowski.
Wazowski. That's a great... Do you see Monsters, U?
Yes.
Not as good.
No, they never are.
Never are.
It's a difficult second movie.
It is. Because the joy is discovering who those characters are. Yeah. And always tricky when you go for a prequel. Because you're like, well, we know it all pans out. No one's going to die. It's all, you know... Anyway.
Also, it's one of those films that's kind of more for the grown-ups than the kids.
Pixar do that from time to time, yeah. Don't they? The classic, I always think, in that oeuvre is Wall-E.
Yeah.
Wall-E is a movie for grown-ups who have got a sense about the impending environmental catastrophe that we're about to endure.
Yeah. I think for most kids, the beginning is so kind of slow that they're lost.
Yeah.
I remember watching it as not a kid and thinking, this is a bit slow and a bit weird and Japanese. I kind of like it. And then it all kicks off. And it was great. But yeah, I think for the grown-ups, like Inside Out.
Yes. Yeah, that's
and
a movie.
To a certain degree, Up.
Well, I mean, the first 20 minutes of Up.
Killer.
If you are a parent, I mean, you may as well just inject your own head full of tears.
and squeeze.
Yeah, because you're not getting over that.
No.
That first 20 minutes is one of the greatest 20 animated minutes in all of cinema history.
It's probably the best animated sucker punch there is.
Yeah.
You think you're getting something. You ain't getting that.
No. And the fact that it... So there's a thing in theatre and all storytelling, which is, let's just say, walking down the street, not really thinking about much of anything, emotionally, you're on a zero. Well, if I want to make you really happy, the most I'm going to get you happy is 10. So I've got to work out how to get you from zero to 10. Well, if I get you up there, do something incredibly funny or incredibly lovely, incredibly heartwarming or whatever, you're... emotional variation is changed by 10 points. But if I can make you sad to a minus 10, so, you know, negative emotion, then make you laugh to a 10, your emotional switch has now gone 20 points. And that move, you know, it's like you feel it. It's that's something that's going to live with you forever.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Up does. You start off all jolly, jolly. Oh, isn't it lovely? They're all together. And by the end of that first 20 minutes, you're so, so sad that the rest of the movie just bit by bit by bit shows you this old man's heart thawing,
yeah.
Allowing himself to love and feel again.
And that poor fatherless kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Weirdly... Have you seen Hunt for the Wilder People?
No, but I keep meaning to.
Oh, it's such a good flick. But in an odd kind of a way, it's like, what if you made up with reality?
Right.
Yeah. Taika Waititi.
Big who... pardon?
I do apologise. I should never have had that korma for dinner. No, Taika Waititi, who just directed Thor Ragnarok.
Uh-huh.
And... maybe also familiar to listeners as the director of What We Do in the Shadows and also the director of, we were talking about them last night, Flight of the Conchords.
Right.
So the HBO series was all directed by him. An incredible sense of humour, a real ability to get those jokes to land on film in a kind of very downbeat and yet zany, sort of weird word to use, zany, but it is sort of zany way. He's made a fair few low-budget New Zealand movies.
I love those already.
Yeah. What We Do in the Shadows, you seen that?
No, but I mean to.
It's a fly-on-the-wall documentary about four vampires, with Jermaine Clement as one of them, Taika Waititi himself as another of them. They're like cool, sexy vampires, but there's also a Nosferatu kind of vampire that lives with them. Very funny stuff. Anyway... essentially proves himself to be able to do comedy and brilliance on film. Marvel hit him up and say, look, the second Thor movie didn't do a lot of business, but we need to keep the Thor brand viable if we're going to kind of keep him as an exciting part of the Avengers, what would you do if we turned over Thor to you? And he made Thor Ragnarok, which is one of the best, absolutely, especially if you like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Never seen it.
Oh, yeah, well, we've had Marvel movies.
I haven't seen any of them yet.
I know, but well, we had this conversation last night, and I deliberately blanked it from my memory, because how can we be friends?
Well, it's not my fault, is what I'm saying to you.
Well, it is your fault.
I would like to see these films, but I have a husband who will sit and watch cricket all day, every day for a whole weekend. What? But can't sit with me for 90 minutes at the cinema. It would appear.
Well, I think some of those Marvel movies are topping over 2 hours now. Have you really never seen Guardians of the Galaxy?
No.
Oh, what is going on with you?
I know, it's all going to pop.
I
might as well not bother.
Back in your box.
My lonely,
curl up,
unentertaining
Let me find you some wood shavings like a hamster and make you comfy and just give you one of those little drippers. I'll put hot tea in it once in a while and you can just lick away at the silver ball.
That to me sounds like bliss. Am I going to be left alone?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah,
do it.
Yeah, I'm totally in.
Punch me a few air holes. I'll be happy with Larry.
Tiny little fur coat, some sticky out teeth. And leave me the F alone.
Love it.
Well, anyway,
I'll
you've not
grumpy
seen them.
Guinea pig.
But you should see the work of Taika Waititi.
That's me ordering that film, by the way.
Oh, very good. Taika Waititi, What We Do in the Shadows, amazing. Thor Ragnarok, really brilliant as a Marvel movie, and what Marvel movies can be when they're left to auteurs to make them their own. And then, yeah, Hunt for the Wilder People, which is basically Up, but done as if it were real.
Oh.
Sam Neill. Yeah. Do you know, the more and more I talk about this, the more I realise it really is like Up in the way that it sets... oh, my gosh, I've really not seen that parallel. Yeah.
You've astounded yourself with your observation.
I have, because the thing is, I now don't want to provide any spoilers for it, because Hunt for the Wilder People is one of those movies that the less you know about it, the better it is.
I love that. It's so rare these days to go and see something where you've got very little clue as to what it's about.
Yeah.
And you can only ever, I think, be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
I'm always much happier with a film that I have no preconceptions about.
When I went to see The Sixth Sense many years ago, my brother was around. And me and my brother don't like... I mean, now we're married with children, so we don't really hang out, just the two of us. But even at that time, there would always be four or five people who were up for going to the pub or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was just at one of those kind of flag in the ground, no, we're not doing that, we're going to go to the cinema. My brother just tagged along. He knew nothing about it, and to this day, it's one of his all-time favourite movies.
I think it's a great film.
Because we were all sat there like, oh, right, there's this massive twist
Everyone
at the
knows,
end.
Yeah.
So you spent the entire time just watching it, trying to work it out, whereas he had no idea there was a twist coming. So when it happened, it blew his mind.
Wonderful. Like, have you seen The Others?
No.
Oh, I love that film.
Is that the Nicole Kidman
Kidman, and I don't generally like her. I find her very hard to... I don't find her very likeable.
There's a coolness to her
that
is quite... a lack of emotional resonance.
I can see she's a really great actor, but I can't... I don't feel invested in her characters because I don't really... Like you said, I don't really warm to her.
Yeah.
And it's nothing she's done, because I think she's a great... In The Others, she's amazing. And it's really atmospheric and really claustrophobic, and it's one to watch on a cold, misty day when you're not going out anywhere.
Oh, nice.
It's wonderful. Okay. Wonderful. Have a look at that when you feel the urge to curl up with a bottle of red wine.
Yeah. In the right part, Kidman can sing.
She's so good in that.
I
think in this, because she's kind of an icy, aloof sort of person.
Yeah.
In it, it's just perfect.
She's in Big Little Lies. Have you seen that?
No, but I've heard loads of great stuff about it.
Yeah, Reese Witherspoon, her, Laura Dern. There were loads of brilliant women in that.
I think Reese Witherspoon's wonderful.
Oh, she's the nuts. Witherspoon, are you kidding me? See her again.
Walk the Line. I loved her in that.
Yeah, yeah. I watch a lot of, YouTube clips of American talk shows, and Witherspoon, a permanent delight.
Oh, because she's just a sparkling wit.
Oh, and she's sort of real and folksy, and yet, you know, has a true artist's temperament. Never disappointed with Witherspoon.
And so bright. Yeah. Isn't she like one of the leading figures in this Time's Up campaign?
Yeah, I think so. Let's Google that while we take these commercial messages.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
The rules of engagement in the Late Night Alternative is you ring up and you decide what we talk about. So let's find out what Frank wants to talk about from St Albans. Hey, Frank!
Good evening, Rufus.
How are you, fella?
I'm very well, mate. Great show.
Oh, well, that's very kind. I felt like we had a bit of zhuzh in the first hour. It was all ripping along. And then I'm definitely tiring.
Well, we destroyed Caddick, so I think we peaked a bit soon.
That was it. We know that the rest of the show isn't going to get better than that, so why even try?
Right, I think Nick Knowles, what he said today, I think hats off to him, because I think that man has done so... Listen, I've watched his programmes when he's put smiles on people's faces, when he does up a house... Not just, you know, he does a programme like where it touches you. And what he said today, mate, he was spot on, mate. It's about having communities that get together. And when you get communities together, mate,
yeah,
it's it puts a smile on your face. And I actually said to your, when I bang up your show tonight and the person answered the phone, you know what, I'm going to put my name forward. I'm going to go and do a bit of voluntary work for the guy, because I think what he's doing now is fantastic for the Grenfell people. Frank, and I think...
Right, rewind a bit for us, Frank, because we don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I very quickly Googled this.
Right, it's Nick Knowles, they're doing a project on DIY SOS for the Grenfell Tower people, to build a community hall boxing gym that was based by the Grenfell Tower, and it was destroyed. And it's a year project. And right. I think what Nick Knowles has done today is fantastic. And I think everybody will get together on this project because it's a good project and it's something that that community needs. And I'm sure... they're going to get loads of people volunteering, and I'm one of them.
Yeah, all right. Well, good for you, man. For anybody wanting more details about this, it was yesterday started a BBC series rebuilding a boxing club, as well as a brand new multi-use space for locals, and they're asking for volunteers and donations of building supplies and interiors.
Yeah, Rupert, this project's going to take a year. But it takes somebody like him, but not the local council,
yeah.
Hammersmith and Fulham, where it is. I know they've done, you know, they said, like, they've put people in hotels and they're giving them homes and this, that and the other.
Yeah.
But there's another point I'm going to make. It's these people want questions answered, and I'll hopefully that these people will get the justice that they deserve.
Yeah, there's... What's his name? We were talking about this before we came on air, funny enough.
Yeah.
Give me a minute. Reggie Yates made a documentary on BBC Three about the kind of the lost faces of, or rather the unknown stories of people who died at Grenfell and the effect it had on, you know, the families and who were they and where were they from, because, you know, people say Grenfell as a headline, but, you know, who were the individuals and what is the history of immigration and the people that lived in that tower? What was that community? And it's absolutely, I mean, it's properly heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking, Rufus, because at the end of the day, you know, these people there, it doesn't matter where you come from, mate, when they've been put in these places and they've come into our country and we made them feel welcome with an open arms, you know what, no matter where they come from in their country, they were given a home here because our country is great. You know, we've always been, the UK's always been for immigration. We've always let refugees in to help them and give them the best support, giving them a new beginning, you know, a new life.
Yeah.
And these people that were living in that tower, maybe there happened to be probably about 95% of them were immigrants. They weren't immigrants, mate. They would come over here for one reason only, to change, to live in a better place, in a better world.
Yeah.
But the people that passed away, mate, if it was some of our families,
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's, I mean, that's the thing that's on this documentary is, you know, two brothers living together.
Yeah.
The fire service ran up. One of them was stood in the hall. The other was stood in the back room. They grabbed the one stood in the hall by the shoulders, push him down the stairs.
Yeah.
He assumes they're running in after his brother. He can't see anything because it's thick with smoke. Gets outside, turns around.
And also, the
his brother's
gone. You know, and the great fire service and everybody that went out to help, the police, you know, the fire brigade and this and the other, they'll all talk about, you know, there's... You know, we're living now in a world, you know, I mean, in London and everything else, where they say we're lacking police and this, that, and the other. The government don't seem to realise one thing. We need to support the police and this, that, and the other, but they always seem to take money away from us, the security that they provide for us. Also, the fire brigade cutbacks and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
I don't know where this country is going, mate. And I think when somebody dies 999, you've got hospitals that are absolutely struggling to make ends meet when all them staff that work in that hospital, they put their heart and soul to try and treat everybody.
Yeah.
And it's the fact is, it's like, come on, man. We should be, you know... They need to be supplying everything to make ends meet. But doctors, I heard a doctor today that come into my shop and he said, you know what, mate, Frank, I only do this job because it ain't about the money. It's because I care and I just try to do my job and save people's lives. Mm. But at the end of the day, mate, we are so... They say... we don't do enough. We don't do enough because I work 100 hours a week and it still isn't enough because the government is taking all this funding away from our hospitals because of the way they're run by the management.
Yeah, I mean, look, I can wang on for hours on end about what's going on in the NHS, so I'll try and avoid doing that. But I think, the personally, for me, the wider issue is there's been a long... history in this country of people talking about tax and like, oh, bloody tax, you've got to pay tax, oh, you know, it's a racket. What we need in this country is a bit of a reinvestigation of why is it we pay tax and what do we pay taxes for? Because the age of austerity that came...
This country is like, the fact is, it's like, we hear everything every day. We hear about companies that are set up in this country that don't pay no tax.
Yeah.
But the people that work for these companies do.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, there's... I mean, this is the thing about globalisation, is you're better off having an employed workforce and the workers paying taxes than you are having people unemployed and having to pay them the dole. So the principle is that whoever you are, we can give you tax breaks, we can let you off the hook, we can turn a blind eye. I mean, you know, the one that always got me was... Do you remember... About 5-10 years ago, Vodafone were let off £6 billion worth of tax. And literally within the same week, it was announced that there were going to have to be £6 billion worth of cuts to the NHS. It was literally like for like, the same number.
Rufus, if you were self-employed, mate, and you happen to do...
I am self-employed, budget, Frank.
What? They'll go back 7 years and they'll sit you up and you'll probably end up going to jail or end up paying or losing your property in the sale. These companies that come into... You know, in the UK, they don't pay no tax and this and the other. And they say, oh, yeah, because... Amazon, I'll do the example, Amazon. They don't pay no tax. Nothing whatsoever. But their staff do. But I don't understand one thing. If we've got all this money coming in from these companies, but they don't pay no tax, why should I pay tax? Or you should pay tax? When these companies get away with billions and billions and billions of pounds... of unpaid tax, which they should pay, but this government that exists at this present moment, they don't care.
No.
And if people out there don't, you know, turn around to the local MPs and it's, listen, you guys should stand up and say, listen, if there's a company in this country that gets away with billions and billions of pounds of unpaid tax, it's because it's a deal that the government's done with these companies. What about us, the working people that have to work 60, 70 hours a week, you know, work hard, pay our taxes, and these companies get away for not paying their taxes.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, mate, Rufus, it's not fair, and the ones that suffer is us. I'm 47, maybe you might be a little bit younger than me, but I tell you what, mate, we're going backwards here, mate, and we're getting worse and worse and worse.
But, you know, look, the upside in everything you said is simply this. We live in a democracy, right? So you've got to have a look, find the parties that is going to change that and vote them into power. Of course this administration's got no interest in curbing what corporations can earn, because this administration owns half of those corporations or is owned by them.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Take a trip into the alternate reality of late night radio.
I think I'm in something like The Matrix, and so are you.
Speech Radio. The difference.
Is there anybody out there?
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Play you the extended mix, and it has absolutely nothing to do at all with needing to make a cup of tea. And that is the thing that you should remember.
I will not withdraw the bag early for anyone.
And that's why she lost her job at the colostomy clinic. you're listening to the Late Night Alternative. Rufus Hound in for Ian Lee with Kath.
Words to all your mothers.
And the way it works, as you surely know by now, is you phone up, we talk about what you want to talk about. But it only works, you see. This is the premise. You phone up, we talk. It only works if you phone up. 0344 499 1000. Should we take a moment to investigate the psychology of the listener? Because the switchboard is
all night.
The switchboard is empty as you like.
Mm-hmm.
I think in life, quite often, you think, I would quite like to phone in, but I don't have anything to say. It wouldn't be very interesting.
Yeah.
We don't care about that. You've heard the quality that we have here. Interesting isn't the bar that is set that you have to either get over or bow under.
Conscious is the only
thing. Tell us about your day. Tell us, you know, what have you learnt in life? What's on your mind? You can phone up anonymously if you want, and we'll try and help you. We'll provide a loving grip.
A loving grip.
I could have phrased that better.
The Rufus Hound story.
Yeah, I mean, I laugh that I've been married for 11 years, so pretty much. you know, this is what we're saying. If you have the time to phone and just want to have a chat, then do that. It's fine. Otherwise, what's going to happen, and I think regular listeners now, by now will have spotted a pattern, what's going to happen is Kath and I are going to talk about films that we've watched.
Or films that we haven't.
Or things that we have absolutely no idea about. And just blindly and belligerently plough our way into topics of discussion that we know almost zip.
We are totally out of our depths.
Oh,
join us.
Gosh, we're two morons floundering for cash on the national airwaves.
Yeah.
You can, you know, come, join us, flap with us. We're going to change the world.
Ah.
Yeah. Piece by piece. One non sequitur at a time. Actually, that's reminded me of Matt Monroe, the singing bus conductor, who, yeah, was basically the British Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
He rose to fame because he sang in the services just after the Second World War. I think, was there still conscription? I think there was.
Yeah.
And he was a singer, signed up, was signed on to the entertainment side of things, did incredibly well, came back to London. Nobody was really that interested. Nobody was biting. And worked as a bus conductor. And then sang at a do that George Martin was at. And George Martin said, "You've got a hell of a voice. Of course you should be doing things." And he has this place in British popular culture where George Martin got Matt Monroe to sing lots of Beatles songs because at the time the Beatles were still viewed as being quite dangerous and only for teenagers. And George Martin was able to say, no, these are incredible songs. If your tastes aren't for the new and the rock and roll, then just hear them sung by Matt Monroe. So, Sam, have you got a moment to find Michelle by Matt Monroe? I think, you know, we can do the list, if you would like, of covers that we think are better than the originals.
Oh.
It's a tricky topic, right?
I've got two.
Right, straight off the bat, no question.
Yeah, Sunshine of Your Love, Spanky Wilson.
Oh, sure, yes.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, an absolute thumper.
Dolly Parton's version of She Drives Me Crazy by the Fine Young Cannibals.
Is that a thing?
It's amazing. It's banjo heavy.
Oh.
It's from their album Backwards Barbie, and it's something else.
All right, well, we will definitely be playing that next. In the meantime, let's have a bit of Matt Monroe. Languorous, already a slight Parisian feel.
Michelle, ma belle, these are words that go together well. My Michelle, Michelle, ma belle. Sans les mots qui vont très bien ensemble, très bien ensemble. I love you, I love you, I love you. That's all I want to say. Until I find a way, I will say the only words I know that you'll understand. Michelle, ma belle, sont les mots qui vont très bien ensemble, très bien ensemble. I need to, I need to, I need to, I need to make you see. Oh, what you mean to me, but until I do, I'm hoping you will know what I mean.
You know, if you're there in the 60s and you think, oh, you know, the Beatles are a bit loud, and suddenly you hear this, you think, oh, Lennon and McCartney knows a right tune.
I want you, I want you, I want you. I think you know by now. I'll get to you somehow. But until I do, I'm telling you, so you'll understand. Michelle, ma belle, sont les mots qui vont très bien ensemble, très bien ensemble. I will say the only words I know. You'll understand.
Laugh through it.
My Michelle. Ah.
What is not to like? Just, and you know, we all listen to music all the time, and we live in a world where lots of people can sing. Our Saturday Night Telly is full of people who can sing. But just that lightness of touch, the delivery, the flow of it all, it sounds effortless. Yeah, just can't not love Matt Monroe.
He's wooing.
He is, yeah, yeah. But it also, as a man, he had kind of quite a blokey way about him, so it didn't feel smarmy.
No.
Frank Sinatra said it was his favourite British singer.
Wow.
And weirdly, what happened with Frank Sinatra also kind of happened with Matt Monroe, which was that having been, you know, Frank Sinatra throughout all the 60s, Rat Pack and, you know, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Vegas, all of that. The 70s comes around, music is changing, and people are expecting songs with a bit of social commentary. And so Sinatra then records an album, I think, called Watertown. I might be wrong about that, might be worth Googling. But it's about a mining town, and the money's gone out of it. And it's a kind of concept album, widely heralded as Sinatra's the worst thing Sinatra ever recorded.
Watertown's right.
It's had a weird resurgence of late. People have re-examined that album and found plenty to enjoy about it. And I would recommend to anybody interested in, you know, anyone who's got Songs for Swinging Lovers or, you know, The Best Ofs or any of that, Sinatra at his peak. One of my all-time favourite albums, Sinatra Live at the Sands. Can't fault that for a second. But Watertown's got a really odd vibe to it. Same thing happened to Matt Monroe. He sings all those songs, he croons, it's beautiful. And then the 70s clicks in, people are expecting something with a bit more edge. He releases a song called Change the World.
Yes.
Which is the thing. And it's about a women's lib march. And
someone gets smacked in it, doesn't she?
That's right. Sam, Change the World, Matt Monroe. If we're taking a little bit of time with a paucity of callers to do a potted history of the work of Matt Monroe, then let's have a listen to this. It's got a beautiful bit of piccolo work.
We play this quite often on this show, this song.
Do you?
Yeah, because it's great.
Oh, fine.
But we can't work out whether he's taking the mick or not.
See, it's
out of the protesters, you know?
Yeah, it's very of its time.
Yeah.
In that it doesn't have mockery inherent within it.
But there's a cheekiness to it.
There is. And it's slightly wry. But I think it is just a song that was written that wasn't meant to be sneery and snidey, but is being sung by exactly the kind of man who
wouldn't have got it.
Who wouldn't quite have known how to place it.
Yeah.
And the record company said to him, do something with a bit of social commentary. Do something that has a bit more of something to say.
What, thinking Ralph McTell?
Yeah.
Instead, getting something that actually wouldn't be amiss in a musical.
No. And it's perky.
It's got a great tune.
And it bops along. So for anybody who hasn't heard it, let's have a bit of Change the World.
Shirley would gulp down her breakfast, shut the fridge and join the throng. Margaret Beatty snatched the milk and scanned the news and went along. Annie Harris drew the curtains, screwed her eyes up, had a beat. Saw the marchers, heard their voices making early morning noises. Stumbled back to bed and tried to sleep. Come with us, run with us. We're gonna change the world. You'll be amazed, so full of praise. When we've rearranged your world, we're gonna change your world. Shuffling through the cold black morning went the marchers, spirits low, grunting greetings, grimly pressing on to where they had to go. When the sun came up, they brightened, stopped to have their thermos brew. Annie Harris got up gladly, bonded for a little sadly. Then got on with what she had to do. So come with us, run with us. We're gonna change the world. You'll be amazed, so full of praise. When we rearrange your world, we're gonna change. Target numbers swollen, up the marchers, banners go. Chanting, shouting out with leaflets, protest for everyone to know. Sit in front of all the traffic, harried, busy shopping wives. Try to stir their ostrich notions, whip them up to wild emotions. Put some fire into their wretched lives. So come with us, run with us. We're gonna change the world. You'll be amazed, so full of praise. When we rearrange your world, we're gonna change your world.
Key change.
Shirley Wood was dragged, still sitting by a policeman from the road. Margaret Beatty had her face slapped by a man she tried to goad.
Tried to goad.
Annie Harris in the office paused in typing, thought of Don, glanced again at his last letter, died for others to live better, brushed away a tear and carried on.
we're gonna change the world. You'll be amazed, so full of praise. When we rearrange your world, we're gonna change. So come with us, run with us. We're gonna change the world. You'll be amazed, so full of praise. When we rearrange.
I mean, we talked about jivvying earlier, and for a quarter past midnight, maybe that's too much, but my gosh. To continue, or at least to round off our brief biography of Matt Monroe, Wikipedia simply says this. Monroe was a heavy smoker and battled alcoholism in the 60s. He died from liver cancer in 1985 and was cremated. The ashes were removed by the family. On the 20th anniversary of his death, it spotlighted Matt Monroe's music, and a compilation of CD was released that did incredibly well. And then his son, Matt Monroe Jr., toured the UK with a tribute concert. If you can make your son proud enough of you that 20 years after your death, he wants to be out there reminding people of how great you were, you can't have got it too wrong, can you? My gosh. So, yeah. Go and listen to some Matt Monroe.
It's great. It's like his voice is manly yet mellow. It's not cheesy.
No.
He was a bloke, you know, proper bloke.
Proper bloke. And if you go on YouTube, I think there are a fair number of clips of performance, whatever. Always a fag on. Always a drink at his side. There's a kind of 60s version of manliness that I think still resonates with anybody, certainly of my era, that was raised on a kind of loaded magazine, like there was a time when men were men and unapologetically so, which all feels a little bit, you know, a little bit not quite 2018, but I can't really shake the idea that that's still really cool.
That sort of Mad Men thing. Before Mad Men started to reform. Early Mad Men, when it was like, wow.
Yeah.
They're drinking at work. Lucky buggers.
If drinking at work is wrong, Kath, I don't want to be right. Listen, we asked for callers. We now have two on the line. And, of course, they're friends of the show. Of course, they're exactly the kind of people who realise the bat signal is being projected onto the cloud and answer that call. Cape swishing in the wind, cowls pulled duly at nose height. So let's check in with Pablo, shall we? You all right, Pabs?
Incoming, the Mamas and the Papa Johns.
Oh, sensational. Both White Soul and pizza.
Yeah, that's what you need. That's well, that, and also possibly accounts for the size of the band. Well, one of them anyway.
Oh, I listen. Kicking your hands off, Cass.
Whoa.
Voice of an angel. Yeah. So, you know.
Wonderful.
Body of a bricklayer.
Oh.
Sorry, that is cruel.
Fat shaming. Fat shaming. Yeah, we're not doing that now, Pabs.
No.
We're not doing it. Time.
I was talking of the time of the release of the music there, so it. But I'll come back to the present day.
Just leave it, man.
Yeah, move on. Yeah. That hole is dug. Step from its side.
I love Cass so much.
And what a hole it is. I was calling.
He was going to leave it, and then he couldn't
engage.
Leave it.
Don't engage, Kath. You're just making it last longer.
Well, it was all the talk of the smoking and the drinking. I was thinking of like the kind of. You know, cabaret hall entertainer. He's got to leave one more just jabbed in. But yeah, no. The main reason I'm calling is I saw Peter Rabbit for the fourth time.
Oh, what for? Why would you see it once?
Yikes!
No, essentially, I get paid. It's a work related thing.
What? Some sort of medical test.
He works for the CG Rabbit Protection League. They send a representative to every screening to make sure at no point are any CG rabbits actually harmed.
Maybe it's to protect the projectionist, just to see how many times they can take it before they go do lols.
Yeah. Quite possible. But yeah, no, it was, and obviously contemporary as it was out a little while ago, but all the furore in regards to the blackberry or blueberry poison mocking people with allergies and the like. But people seem to skirt over. There is an actual scene where Peter Rabbit does affect smoking a spliff at a party.
It's what Beatrix Potter would have wanted. Yeah.
completely pasted over. I think out of the two, you know, one of them's a judgment call, the other one's kind of that is directly referencing only one thing and one thing only. I'm all for, you know, jokes for the parents, you know, one for the mums and dads, but it's a little bit on the nose.
A Camberwell carrot heavy on the carrot.
Well, that's what I thought. Yeah, heavy on the quivering nose.
I mean, I haven't seen it, nor do I have any wish to, because there's a YouTube channel called Movie Bob, in Bob We Trust. It's, you know, it's sort of classic YouTube fare.
Is this the Australian chap?
No, he's American. I think he's from sort of New England. My guess is, from the accent, I'm guessing somewhere near Boston, possibly Chicago. I don't really know. Right. I don't really know.
He sounds a bit Family Guy, does he?
There's a smidge of that, but I couldn't place him. I'm sure one of the many podcasts or vodcasts or whatever he's done, it's, you know, absolutely apparent, but I don't really know. But everything he says about pretty much everything, I'm like, yeah, right on, man. He did, I mean, in the days of YouTube, there being no real requirement to keep anything brief, he did do a 3-hour... In fact, it might even be longer, it might even be 4.5-hour breakdown of why Batman versus Superman was awful.
So hang on, the breakdown was longer than the film?
The breakdown was 2.5 times longer than the movie, and that movie was already too long.
He really hated that thing.
But that's it, it's because he's a kind of like pan pop culture guy. He breaks it down as just like in story arc terms, in character terms, in terms of where the DC universe sits in relation to the Marvel universe. I mean, it is forensic, and you could absolutely argue too much. But I didn't realise how long it was, because he did it in 3 parts.
Right.
And I didn't realise how long the first part was. And after about 10 minutes, I'm like, he's barely getting warmed up, but I'm like super into what he's saying. And it was so fascinating hearing him really kind of go for a deep dive on all of this stuff that I ended up watching all 4.5 hours of it. Now, I'm not really suggesting that you have to. And the thing that actually got me watching him is his point was, it's incredibly easy to be cynical, and cynical sort of gets you clicks if you just rag on something and rip into something, which is why he'd created the series called Really That Good, where he was taking beloved movies and asking the question, we all remember them as being amazing, but are they really that good? And I watched two, I mean, they're both quite long form. One on National Lampoon's Vacation and one on Ghostbusters.
Right.
And on both counts, he kind of really just sets out what it is, the real juju in that thing that makes it as great as it is.
Did he talk about how rapey Ghostbusters is? By modern standards.
No, he absolutely touches on the fact that when you watch it again with modern eyes, there's
Bill
a lot
Murray
about
is
it.
A creep.
There's plenty about it that's massively distasteful. And that, funny enough, because he does movie reviews that are much shorter. He did one on the gender flip Ghostbusters, the most recent Ghostbusters movie.
Which, by the way, I really enjoyed.
Yeah, that was sort of his point as well. It's like,
but it wasn't really a Ghostbusters reboot; it was a different film.
Yeah, no, it was tricky, wasn't it? Because it was sort of genesis of Ghostbusters rather than franchise of Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
So it does fit sort of weirdly in that universe. But anyway, I really love everything Movie Bob has to say about things. Can you remember? Because I certainly can't, where I started all of this.
Peter Rabbit, and the reason you won't see it is because Bob said no.
Because Bob said no, but he on the whole, tries to steer clear of just being relentlessly mean about something for no reason. But my gosh, he really had a go at Peter Rabbit, and it was so funny that I have no need to see that film.
Of course, the argument back to Bob is, they didn't make that film for him.
No, but I think often the thing that I really like about Movie Bob is he talks about the kind of cynicism behind what something is,
right,
and why this is ill thought out. Like, by all means, make a Peter Rabbit movie. But the thing that makes Peter Rabbit Peter Rabbit and not just an other CG animal character in a movie is, like, there are some core values in that character that you kind of have to respect for it to be that thing. And if you're just going to bin all of that from the outset, then why are you making a Peter Rabbit movie?
Yeah, well, you can see the people counting the money behind the screens. That's all it's about. It's the merchandise.
Yeah, and it's
But the merchandise was doing pretty well without that.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. But it's
not for those people.
Not for those people. Yeah, you're right.
You know, and obviously they'll get a rub. The BBC will get a rub on it, and the likes of it. I must say it was better than I expected, but I had very, 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 very low expectations. So it's subpar at best.
But you've watched it four times.
I may have dropped off slightly on this one occasion. But officially, I didn't. I was just resting my eyes, power napping.
I'll tell you what, Pabs, stay where you are. Don't go anywhere. We'll come back to you. But rest your eyes for a few short minutes while we enjoy these commercial messages.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Keeping it going. We've got our whip to the horse's rump as we ride this baby all the way through till 1 a.m. We do so with the, to continue the analogy, with Pablo as our stable boy.
With crack away.
Keep shoveling, crack Pabs. Away.
So anyway.
Sorry, it was an accident.
You may have nodded off the fourth time during Peter Rabbit.
Well, I thought I haven't actually described the scene. I could probably do an intrinsic detail at this point, but just to cut to the chase. It's basically there's a party scene where they run a house ram shots and the animals everywhere, all wearing their coats and jackets and hats and whatnot. Nobody says anything about it till the end, and then it's like a knowing whatever. But there's this kind of separate scene, lots of incidental ones, and there's one where Peter Rabbit and this lady rabbit have not seen again. And they're lying in front of the fire, and they're both lounging back, and Peter's having some sort of philosophical discussion, basically saying how everything times a construct, as previously noticed by a prior caller.
Right.
And they're holding a carrot in quite a suggestive way, kind of floating it about in the air as he's talking. And then he finishes his point and passes the carrot towards the lady bunny who's lying back, and she pushes her hand out and shakes her head and says, well, she doesn't say anything, like as in to say no in the kind of standard, oh no, I don't type of thing. And then it moves on, not referenced again, but it was just, each time I've seen it, I find it more jarring.
There's no need for it, is there?
It's completely, because it's the whole kind of like jokes for the parents type of thing, and that's kind of more kind of the odd pun or something a little bit bordering on the risque, but that's just very niche and very much, and it's James Corden, who, if I'm not mistaken, is very much anti all sorts of things with his religious beliefs and whatnot. But yeah, it just seems, I believe so. I've heard some interviews with him in like American talk radio type things. Not that I'm hunting out James Corden interviews.
Aren't you though? Because it does sound.
He did one with Chris Hardwick, who does The Nerdist, and he did some sort of spin-off podcast, which was also a TV program, and he talked a lot more about his faith in that, which he doesn't normally do.
Well, no, I'm just reading here that he was raised Salvation Army, but now he doesn't really think he is religious anymore.
Yeah, well, he's kind of switched it to a very positive, like Uber thinking, bordering on the Edmonds, but not quite the Edmonds.
Wow.
It's very much kind of like positive mental attitude. If I visualise something,
he's been in LA too long.
Yeah. In fairness to him, for a bloke from Berkshire who started off in playing a giant boy in a Muppet movie. He's done very well for himself, hasn't he?
He's done very well. I mean, I often show regional pride, having to do that quite a bit for the Ant and Dec brothers at the minute. I suppose on the national front, I suppose it's like relatives, you can pick on them, but if somebody else does it, there's trouble.
There's no evidence he's in the national front, but we should just underline.
Yeah. We do need to be very clear about that.
Great. Oh, just in regards to records, you mentioned Dolly Parton.
Mm.
Have you heard the Dolly Parton on the 35 RPM?
Yes.
Yes, where it just sounds like it sounds like Leonard Cohen, I suppose, a little bit.
Yeah. A point was made to me rather brilliantly, which is, if you listen to it slowed down, it's like this an incredible song. It's like, it's actually because perfectly fine at the regular speed.
Because here's the surprise, here's the twist, everyone. It's an incredible song.
Yeah.
We call it an alternate take.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. But I think it's one of those weird things, sort of culturally, where we can't just say, this incredible woman did an incredible thing. It's like, but if you slow it down, it sounds like a man.
But it's still her, so if she was to release it under a nom de plume of some sort, she would still rake in the dough. It would all go under her, Dolly World.
It would also be a gay anthem, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, isn't it already?
Yeah.
Yeah, but what I mean is, if it's a man singing, Jolene, I'm begging of you, please don't take my man, that's a whole nother story.
Well, I suppose.
No, suppose about it.
About the stories you can get.
I don't know if the person who's loaded down put much thought into that.
But maybe in these gender fluid times, it might not be the song you want, Kath, but it's the song we bloody well need. Well, Pabs, was there anything else to throw into the mix?
I've been painting an egg to look like Superman. Well, helping my daughter do it. That's been a bit of fun.
Very good. Is that for an Easter egg hunt or for a bonnet?
I'd been told about it a little while ago, and then time kind of encroached in, so I had to run back in between shifts and do it. But it's all done. It's got a cape and everything. But it seems to be, definitely a local thing. I've seen lots of photos popping up on social media of, this is our egg. All of them much better than ours, but...
Mm.
They kind of pushed it. There's fairy lights involved. There's shoe boxes with holes cut in them. You know, I've put a bit of fabric around a toilet roll, but essentially it's mostly the egg.
Well, it sounds like you've done a the whole point of this, you realise, is not to win. It's to spend some time with your daughter. Have you let her have a go?
Oh, she did it all. The only thing I did some cutting out of the fabric, of course, into the sticking on the fabric. But the only thing I did to the egg was paint a guideline of do not pass this line.
Go on, I was going to say, you're very good, because in these projects I always end up saying, I'll do this. You go and do something else.
Yeah.
My latest production, a massive nut.
Oh.
I saw the nuts, yeah.
I was really proud of that nut.
For World Book Day.
Yes.
The mouse saw the nut and the nut looked good.
The nut was flipping amazing, tell you. I didn't say so myself.
At my daughter's school, they do, on the last day of term... an Easter bonnet parade. Is that a standard?
I think they had one at my daughter's school yesterday for the children whose parents remembered. My daughter was hatless.
Excluded.
sounds quite country.
Yeah.
It was a weird moment, actually, making... I wasn't terribly involved, I'll be honest, because I had work to do. But my missus and my daughter making this Easter bonnet, because it's the last year that my daughters are infants... And it's at infants they do the Easter bonnet parade. They don't do it at junior school. So we've basically had, 8 years, I think? Yeah, more or less, of having at this time of year to make some elaborate headwear for one of our children to wear for the last day of Easter term, or spring term. And Beth explained to my daughter, really get involved in this. This is the last time that this will happen. And, like, Hilda processing, hang on, so they don't do this everywhere. And then that tipped over into Beth and I going, oh, right, yeah, this is the last time we do this. Like, there was this, for the first time, like, a really finite point of, oh, our kids are getting older and some of these things will be being left behind. It's a weird, jarring moment, a little future echo of empty nest syndrome, like, oh, yeah, right, they will move on.
It happens every so often, doesn't it, just to remind you that actually the days seem long and it feels like, you know, the routine kind of just carries you along, and then all of a sudden there are things you won't be doing again. And...
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe it's time to make another Superman egg, perhaps.
Well, possibly. Oh, and also, we've seen Peter Rabbit 4 times, but I've also seen you 4 times on the same screen, Mr. Rufus Hound.
How did you manage that?
Well, they're advertising the Wind in the Willows.
Oh, are they?
Yes. I don't know if it's going to be on screen, I believe so.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
So we were on at the Palladium all last summer and had a ripe old time of it. And, yeah, now it's... they filmed it all. We were told it would be going into cinemas. We were sort of question-marky about that. The American company put in a lot of money, and they film a lot of Broadway shows, and it's a thing called Broadway HD. So a bit like Netflix, mm-hmm. but for theatre in New York. And so they put a lot of money in. So they've been streaming it, or able to stream it, in America for months. But, you know, you have the national boundary thing where if you're in the wrong country, you can't stream it. So one of the guys that I was in the show with was on tour in Hong Kong, and that seems to connect up to what internet you can get in America. So he'd actually streamed it and watched it and said it was fantastic. They did a big screening for it, and I was away. I couldn't go and see it. But the folk I was in with it said they've done a bang-up job. They were all really, really pleased with it. So, yeah, over Easter, if you want to go to the cinema and don't want to watch Peter Rabbit, and it's... adultizing of a much-loved English classic, then go and see Wind in the Willows, which is much more suitable for a family audience.
And no character abused in that.
No, at no point do we insinuate that any of us are smoking marijuana.
Although food allergy-based threatenings or anything like that either.
There's a bit in the book where the mice come round in winter wassailing, which I didn't know very much about, but it's an old English tradition where people would go from house to house with a bowl.
And they'd get leathered.
And they would, yeah, you'd tip a little nip of something boozy in the bowl, and then at the end you had a kind of punch, and everybody would drink the punch. That was called wassailing. And we had four little mice. They were people. the wassailing mice, and they came and sang the wassailing mice song. And they are giving thanks for all the animals in the woods.
Aww.
It's very sweet. It's it was with two of the children actors that we had in it as well. It was four adult mice and then two little kid mice. And one of the lines in it is like, give thanks for the robin, give thanks to the toad, give thanks to the rat and the rivers he's rode, give thanks to the blue tit. And at that point, every night without fail, the actor playing Ratty went... deliberately out to the audience in order to encourage them to find the word tit funny. So when you watch it, see, I don't know if that made it into the final edit or whether they tried to cut around it. We will find out whether they decided to endorse that despicable bit. But I think that's about as subversive as Wind in the Willows gets.
Aww.
So if you're a bit sick fed up of Peter Rabbit, yeah, go. It's on in selected cinemas.
Was it fun being the toad? He is the best part, isn't he?
He is the best part, yeah. I'm doing Noel Coward at the minute, and playing it's basically all set in an actor's flat, and he's 40 and sort of midlife crisis, and the people that he's in business with are all saying to him, you've got to calm down, you can't be, you know, bringing groupies back here and all of that. Bear in mind, it was written by Noel Coward in 1937, so it's all very stiff upper lip, and, you know, they don't really talk about anything truly sexual.
Proclivities.
Yeah, but it's all, you know, you know what's going on. It's all there. But it's, again, I basically get asked to play a lot of characters who are absolutely full of themselves. Won't hear a word of reason. Seem to have very able people around them who are ridden roughshod over with a kind of belligerence. And I've got no idea why people keep asking me to play that
part.
It's
the whiskers.
It's the moustache, isn't it? Thank you, Kath. I knew it couldn't possibly be anything deeper. It was all about the moustache all along. Pablo?
That's how you scored Waffles.
That's it, yeah, Waffle the Wonder Dog. It's basically the same character. Everybody spends ages running around after a small dog.
Are you Waffle?
I'm Waffle the Wonder Dog.
Boom.
Oh my God, my kids are going to be blown away.
Did you not know that? Have I not shared that with you?
Actually, you did.
Yeah, ages
ago. But I didn't put two and two together. You told me you'd done a voiceover for a talking dog.
Yeah.
Oh God, we only just started... Well, I've only become aware that they've been watching this over and over again for the past week or so. Oh my God, your waffle. Waffle doggy. Waffle doggy.
Kat's going to need a moment to calm down.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
You're listening to Talk Radio with Waffle the Wonder Dog slash Toad of Toad Hall, available in cinemas, slash the voice of Extreme Cake Makers, in Doncaster. Molly's preparing to make the crumb coat that will eventually sit round her 19-foot horse cake.
That's Kate Robbins' niece, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It transpires. Ted Robbins' daughter.
Oh, it's Ted Robbins' daughter, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because they...
Those cakes are amazing, though. They look like models.
Amazing. And Molly's really brilliant at making them. But it was absolutely... You know, it wasn't like a showbiz thing. The programme makers were looking for people who made amazing cakes and they found Molly Robbins. And then when they went up there filming, they get to her house and they're like, why are there loads of pictures of Ted Robbins? Oh! So, quite often, her dad does help her deliver cakes. But when it's a cake that they're filming for Extreme Cake Makers, he won't deliver them because he's like, no, this is about her.
Yeah.
And if I... But there is like one episode, I can't remember which one it is, but there's one episode where she's like properly up against it, she's just got to get it there. And you see this man that you kind of vaguely recognise with a fleece pulled like right up to his ear. Where he's like, yeah, I don't want it to be about me, it's about how brilliant my daughter is. It's really sweet.
Who is this mysterious helper?
Yeah, who is this odd dad who's sort of like lurking? But yeah, it's really sweet. Yeah, lots of, basically just doing lots of very fun stuff.
You're doing no harm.
That's it. I sort of got to a point a couple of years ago where the writing was on the wall about how awful it was to see the world. And I thought, I think I might quite like to do some things that are antidotes to that, largely on the grounds that when I get home, I don't put on crime dramas and, you know, people pointing guns at each other and being horrible to each other. Because I kind of already accept the world is like that. I want to watch dopey things and things that make me smile and things I can watch with my kids.
Which brings us back to Coach Trip.
Which brings us back to Coach Trip, pretty much, exactly that. And weirdly, brings us even further back, talking about Big Brother and early 90s reality shows. When X Factor started, it was quite funny to watch the rubbish ones and point and laugh and smirk.
Yeah, but now you know they've been set up to do that.
Now we know too much. And so The Voice, which has sort of taken over and been successful and people like, is all people who we know can sing, people we know are very good, and it's just, are they good enough? Are they to the taste of these judges? And I think that's sort of a running theme, is we'd all rather just have a little bit of something lighter and easier and kinder.
Although, with The Voice, I think they have gone down the road of they will do the sob stories and...
Yeah, but that's just telly.
I know, but aren't we over the sobs now?
Well, we are a bit, but, you know, the trouble is, how do you make any of these people stand out from one another?
Very few people ever do anything just for themselves.
Yes. Well, but, I mean, you can be kind of cynical about that. The problem is that, essentially, it's Saturday night TV more than it is a straight-up singing contest.
Yeah, so there needs to be a story.
Yeah, you got but that's okay, really. You can be, you know, maybe a bit bored of it and feel like you've seen it a million times before, but what are you going to get otherwise?
The thing is with The Voice, though, that sometimes that they upset the apple cart. So, for example, do you remember when Bernie Clifton went on?
Yeah.
And so you thought, oh, well, I mean, it's Bernie Clifton and they're giving him a lot of pre-audition attention.
Yeah.
They only ever do that when someone's got through.
Yeah.
He didn't get through?
No. No. But again, that's good programme making, that you think, you know, it's going one way and then it doesn't.
Mm.
I think there was one a little while ago.
There was a...
Carol Smiley's daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you get, you know, Carol Smiley and her husband talking about how proud they are of their kid and... Clearly, she's going to be very good. Didn't get through.
There was also a woman who's really successful as a West End singer.
Yes. Yeah, that was a tough watch.
Yeah, because she didn't get a look in, did she?
No. And she was clearly incredibly good.
But it wasn't the right style. I think sometimes it can be too West End.
And also, often, if it's not quite the right song.
Yeah.
That's one of the things you can't underestimate with those shows. Anyway, we said we wanted things that were kinder, happier and lovelier. What better way to round off this than talking to Barry in Western Supermare? Comrade.
Hey, comrade, comrade Rufus.
Well met.
Yeah. Yeah, I've enjoyed the journey through the show with Catherine and Sam and yourself tonight. It's been very musically sort of slanted. So it's been a really nice show tonight. But sorry about Alan. I hope it's just a nicotine starvation.
That's it. We caught him on a crotchety moment.
I know he don't tend to listen and phone in late, but if he is, Alan, carry on. Give us a call again tomorrow, mate.
Yes.
Wish him the best with it.
He'll be back.
Oh, I think Alan's one of those characters that I think we can make jokes about, but he knows that really they are with. You know, he's part of the furniture. You know, there's part of the joy of it is being a little bit mean and poking him with a bit of a stick. But if he was genuinely upset, or he thought it was genuinely meant, or people were mean to him, I think he'd stop ringing.
I mean, we are fundamentally trying to stop him from killing himself.
Yes.
So I think he'll see through it if he was at all bothered. But I don't know how much of it was theatre on his part.
Yeah. No, I think he was playing along. I thought he was doing a tremendous job.
Yeah, it's all right, as Alan. Just a couple of points, really, because I know Catherine and Ian have discussed about Matt Munro, you know, and whether he sort of takes the mick a bit, you know. And I think the guy did, you know. I see him as being a working class guy who did very well. I mean, he charted at the end of the 50s with a song called Portrait of My Love. I mean, he had quite a long charting career.
Yeah.
I saw him towards the end when it was on the wane a little bit, and that. The beauty of that voice, he was such a lovely middle-of-the-road singer, and I don't know, I suppose I'm a bit of a philistine, but I always preferred him to Sinatra. I mean, I just thought the guy had a really lovely voice, and I think he did have that little bit of a side to him where he did take the mick out of us a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
The
thing I realised that we didn't mention, of course, was that he did the theme from Russia with Love.
Mm.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so, I mean, you know, he's...
And The Godfather. Didn't he do One Day, la, da, 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 da. Didn't he do that one? Days Like These?
Days Like These, yeah, yeah.
Yes, he did,
It's
yeah.
On days like these that I remember singing songs and drinking wine while your eyes played games with mine. Ba-da-da-da.
My Auntie Doreen had a Matt Munro song at her funeral. It was the most beautiful thing. Is it Softly As I Leave You or something?
Oh, don't.
Oh, it was an absolute...
I can barely get through that at the best of times.
Beautiful.
At the funeral of a loved one. Couldn't do it, mate.
She knew what she was doing to Doreen.
Yeah, I've heard a few people say it, like, you know... When people talk about their own funerals, they're like, I want everyone to wear bright colours and I don't want anyone to be sad. I want it to be a celebration of my life. And that reason I've heard a few people say, I want crying in the aisles. I want people wailing and banging on the coffin and swearing to God that how could you take this hero from us?
Exactly.
I think that, you know, there's something to be said for both approaches, but Softly As I Leave You will, that'll do it. The comedy impresario Malcolm Hardy, as his coffin went through the curtain into the crematorium, had Return to Sender playing. And I think that takes some beating.
Yeah, you got to think quite a little bit about what music you're going to have. And what you don't want are these stereotypical vicars who never even knew you. They build a bit of a picture up. You want somebody there, give the eulogy that knew you and what you were all about. And, give a little bit of thought to the music. I'm doing a creme job, so I think I'll have Burn Baby Burn. I'll go down well.
Yeah, perfect.
What I wanted to ask Rufus, for Catherine and yourself, something I thought about recently when the knighthood was given out to Ringo Starr.
Oh, aye.
And growing up through that, from the end of the 50s right the way through, I was very blessed, you know, with the bands that were around. And obviously the Beatles, major impression on most people of my generation.
Yeah.
And yeah, as you said, I think you mentioned when you were chatting about the sort of Beatles, it was that little bit of a dangerous sort of thing to them.
Yeah, it was an edge.
Probably come, I think, when they become a studio band. And there was that little bit of anti-establishment. But then when I look... Paul McCartney, I wasn't surprised took the night out. Ringo's just Ringo. But I was wondering, it's hypothetically speaking, of course, but I couldn't see John Lennon ever taking it.
No.
No, he would have taken great pleasure in telling him to shove it, wouldn't he?
I think he would.
But there's a bit of a get-out with knighthoods, isn't there? Because the point about knighthoods is that you're recommended for one by various organisations or charities or whatever. So I've known, in history, people have thought, I'm surprised they've taken the honours.
Tony Robinson.
Yeah, they say, the thing is, people put me up for this,
yeah.
And they wanted me to receive it in recognition of a thing, and I would feel ungrateful to them if I turned it down. So you get a bit of a get out of jail free card.
I also wonder about John Lennon. I think he would have changed. Everyone changes as they get older. He might have mellowed.
Yeah. Although, did you see Paul McCartney at the anti-gun demonstration in New York, Barry?
Yes, yeah. I was actually chatting on the journey up today with my mate. We go up to Glastonbury on a Tuesday, a regular day. And that come up in the conversation. And of course, he was directly affected by that, wasn't he, with the death of his mate, with John?
Yeah. I've got a march against this because one of my best mates died in gun violence just around the corner from here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, I think, coming back to this thing with John Lennon, I mean, Catherine's right. He could well, you know, people do mellow with age. But I don't know. I think he just had that side to him. I mean, he was quite an amazing character. I mean, he changed from being, you know, quite an angry man. And then we saw that sort of peace side to him.
Yeah.
But I think he was always himself. I think he always had that little bit of shock element to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's absolutely right that, you know, the change that would have been required of him would have been pretty seismic. For him to then turn around and, you know, take one knee. Anyway, listen, Barry, we've come to the end of our time. Thanks, as ever, for ringing.
It's lovely talking to you once again, Rufus.
Fingers crossed. That, my friends, brings us to the end of the Late Night Alternative. This show will be back in a mere 21 hours. How will you fill the time between now and then? That's up for you to decide!